nearby and being a part of that movement. Have a very great day. We'll hear from you tomorrow. Put on your calendars the Sustainability Fair and the Solar Home Tour set for September 29th at the Carmel Middle School. Pop that on your calendars now so that you can be there. And we'll be hearing, or we'll be listening, or you'll be listening to me tomorrow, I sure hope. And stay tuned right now for the Peter B. Collins Show coming up after the CBS News.
The program you have just enjoyed is a previously recorded broadcast.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Hartley Carnes.
Mr. President, welcome to Anbar.
President Bush in Anbar Province today visiting troops helped set the stage for the coming report from the generals in Iraq on the current situation. He said if the current pace of progress continues, it'll be possible to draw down the number of U.S. forces. As for political calls for an early withdrawal,
those decisions will be based on a calm assessment by our military commanders on the conditions on the ground, not a nervous reaction by Washington politicians to poll results in the media.
Marine Captain Lee Hemming is a Cobra gunship pilot. He told the president morale among the forces there is very high, but he also told him they need more time back home.
The stress on the families, year after year of only being home for 5 months, it's become a little harder each time.
President Bush is now en route to Australia. CBS's Peter Mayer.
There will be no time for jet lag following the long flight from Iraq to Sydney. After a few hours' rest, the president heads into meetings with Australian Prime Minister John Howard. Topping the agenda, Iraq and Afghanistan, where 2,500 Australians serve in peacekeeping duties. Trade and climate change will also be top issues in the president's meetings with world leaders at this week's Asia-Pacific summit.
A new study says millions of children, boys and girls, have a hard time keeping their attention on the moment or sitting still for very long.
There have been all sorts of estimates of how many American kids have attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Now a study in the archives of pediatrics and adolescent medicine pinpoints a figure, 2.4 million. Lead author Dr. Tanya Frelick says more than half of these children are not diagnosed.
Children who lacked health insurance had lower rates of both diagnosis and treatment.
So did girls compared to boys. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Hurricane Felix is motoring toward Honduras.
The maximum winds have come down a little bit, 135 miles per hour with our gusts. It's still an extremely dangerous category for hurricanes. Capable of widespread damage.
Eric Blake at the National Hurricane Center. Nathan Heiger is an American hunkered down in a hotel in Honduras.
We are just purchasing some as much water as we can and getting ready with some food, stocking up a little bit.
Labor Day weekend has hopefully been great for you and your family. Tomorrow it's back to the grindstone, back to teachers and homework and scratching blackboards. The United Nations International Labor Organization says, by the way, Americans are the hardest workers in the world. We stay longer on the job and produce more than any other people. People in Asia do spend more time at their jobs, but they don't produce nearly as much as we do. As for the rest of the nations of the world, except for Norway, no one, not the French, not the Germans, or the Brits, produce the way we do. And Latin and South Americans and Africans aren't even in the ballgame by comparison. This is CBS News.
Put Monday behind you. Tuesday's done, oh no worries. Wednesday's perfect to unwind. Let's go out back tonight.
Let go this summer with two new No Worries Wednesday mixed grills. Our classic grilled seafood and steak or our bold barbecue mixed grill. Enjoy two new mixed grills.
Let's go out back tonight.
Now you can order curbside takeaway online at outback.com. Just click and pick up.
Hi, I'm Reggie Bush of the New Orleans Saints. If you live for football like I live for football, all you got to do is switch to Dish Network. Get football 24/7 on the NFL Network on Dish Network.
Get in the game with Dish Network and get over 100 of the hottest channels for only $29.99 a month. Get the best sports and movies in HD with a free HD DVR upgrade and free HD programming for 6 months. Call 1-888-770-DISH today. Offer ends 1/31/08 and is subject to change without notice. Requires $49.99 activation fee and 18-month commitment. Restrictions apply.
The guards at the Tower of London have been locking that tower and keeping it safe for more than 500 years. Never in all that time, not since 1485, has a woman worn the Beefeater's black uniform with red trim until now. Her name is Moira Cameron. She's from Scotland and says the people do love talking to her.
taken. We're so proud of you. And I'm like that going, it's like having about 1,000 mums. It's brilliant.
There's good reason to guard the Tower of London, of course. The crown jewels are there. The jewels are in good hands. Beefeater Cameron has served the British Army for 22 years. The list of the ways that drugs can kill children just seems to have gone up one. In Ontario, California, a woman told police she didn't realize the cotton swab she used to wipe her baby boy's nose was the same one she had used to clean out her meth pipe. The residue killed the little 8-month-old when he breathed it. Prosecutors say murder charges are likely. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Hey, Tanya Roberts here, and I want to know, where are you going on your next romantic getaway? Well, how about 3 days and 2 nights in Las Vegas? And what about you don't pay a dime for it? That's right. Act like a high roller in Vegas and pay nothing for it. It's all part of our celebration of Vegas' newest 5-star resort, Tahiti Village. We want you to get out of Dodge. Stir up a little romantic magic in the most exciting city on earth with a complimentary second honeymoon, all on Tahiti Village. Come on, you know you deserve it. You know you want it. Las Vegas is calling. So stop what you're doing and call the special toll-free number, 866-40-GO-NOW. Oh, and as a bonus, if you call right now, they're going to throw in tickets to a hot show right on the strip. Can we say high roller treatment, baby? So call 866-40-GO-NOW for all the exciting details. That's 866-40-GO-NOW. Call now.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to another hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B., joining you from San Francisco. This hour, not intentionally, is a green hour. In about 30 minutes, Jeremiah Bauman will join us from Environment Oregon. There's an effort to amend Measure 37 to protect forests and other farmlands, too. We'll get the lowdown on that from Jeremiah coming up in about half an hour. And for some people, going green happens once a year on St. Patrick's Day. But Kevin Danaher has been at it for a while, co-founder of Global Exchange, and together with a couple of his colleagues, he's co-authored a book called Building the Green Economy, subtitled Success Stories from the Grassroots, and grass is in green there. In fact, there's a lot of green on the cover here. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Nice to talk with you again.
Same here.
You've been working hard. Why don't you first update us on the Green Festivals? It's that season, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. We do the Green Festival in Washington, D.C. at the D.C. Convention Center is October 6th and 7th. The San Francisco Green Festival is November 9th, 10th, 11th. And then we have added Chicago. We just did our first show in Chicago just this past April, and we had 31,000 people come through the door. And we're adding this year New Seattle. So the Seattle Center show this year is April 12th and 13th, and then Chicago show at Navy Pier is May 17th and 18th. And we're getting incredible response. People are showing that, you know, at least the ones who don't listen to Hannity and Combs, they're getting it that we're destroying the planet, we're destroying the biological systems that support human life, and we got to start changing the nature of the economy to make it sustainable.
Just one correction when you talk about those guys on the Fox News channel. It's Hannity and Combs.
Yeah, right, Combs. It's like he's a straw man. Is he real? Is he there? Is he three-dimensional or two-dimensional?
I think his microphone is permanently turned down two notches from Sean's.
Well, you know, I was on one time with them. I've been on their show a bunch of times. And I was on one time, and it was about the war, and the first person attacking me was him, and I thought it was Hannity. And I'm like, wait a minute. You're supposed to be the liberal. You're attacking me because I'm for peace, and this war is showing itself to be a disaster. And it just, the whole spectrum is so shifted to the right.
You know? Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things, the book is fascinating. It's got a lot of great stories, the kind of thing you can pick up and read for a while and come back to later. You cover a whole range of subjects that you include under the broad idea of green and green economy. And let me start off in the introduction here, Kevin, where you expand the definition of green.
Yeah.
Tell us what it means to you. It's more than hybrids and solar power and wind power and alternative energy.
Well, it's a lot about local control. These stories are about local people, not you know, architects, PhDs, presidents, anything like that. It's just regular folks who got themselves organized, and that's the key element that runs through it, whether it's shutting down a prison, putting wind power on a Native American reservation, creating a company that's going to take liquid worm poop, liquid compost, put it in recycled soda bottles, and sell it in stores as plant food. The company's TerraCycle was started by a 24-year-old college dropout. It's all these cases, nice little short chapters, stories about people, regular people, who got their act together and got organized. And there's some chapters in the book that people will say, well, what's green about this? Local control lays the basis for green. Because look at the example of, let's say, food. If you've got organic garlic that's coming from China, as opposed to some non-organic garlic that's coming from Gilroy,
yeah.
I'll take the Gilroy garlic because the effect on the planet, and not to mention the slave labor wages paid in China or anything like that, but just all the transportation costs. The average piece of food in the United States travels about 1,500 miles from where it was grown to your plate on average. That's just incredibly inefficient. So
you also identify social justice as an issue. And just the other day, as we were talking about China with the recall of 19 million toys due to lead paint and loose magnets, the story broke about the newest disease, a blue pig syndrome of some sort. And what I learned from that is that there is a growing organic farming industry in China.
Oh, yeah.
But it's the state officials who cherry-pick the organic produce, and it doesn't go to export, and it doesn't go to the average Chinese citizen.
Yeah, that's the problem with an undemocratic system where people, when I was over there a year and a half ago, there was an accident between a car and a bicycle rider. The car was being driven by a local government official, and of course he gets out. It was his fault, but he gets out, you know, starts copping attitude. 10,000 people rioted in the streets over this one little accident. So that tells you there's a lot of kindling that's just waiting for a match. You got to remember that the one-child policy resulted in a lot of female infanticide, so you got a disproportionate number of males to females now. So you got guys who can't get married and they can't get a job. They're headed for an environmental and social explosion if they don't watch out.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Danaher with us from Global Exchange and co-author with two of his colleagues, let's name them, Shannon Biggs and Jason Mark, of this new book, Building the Green Economy, Success Stories from the Grassroots, and it's out in a soft cover from Polypoint Press. Set you back less than $17 at your local independent bookstore, or go to Powell's online, particularly our listeners in Portland. That's a great independent bookstore to support. Now, this is just serendipity, Kevin, but a news release came in from some PR agency. I get a lot of this stuff, and I don't always ask for it. And I'm trying to figure out the angle here, but just humor me for a moment. The headline reads, Executives Dumping Environmentally Unfriendly Outsourcers. And the lead here is, green factors are forcing a new stage of expectations on global outsourcing suppliers. Environmental concerns have entered into the formal selection process of outsourcing vendors. According to a recent Brown Wilson Group, authors of the Black Book of Outsourcing, that's their plug. Anyway, they're saying 21% of publicly traded companies that outsource functions have added green policies and performance demands to their vendor contractual arrangements. Now, that sounds good on the face of it. But don't we have a number of issues here that often get greenwashed by companies that want to try to imbue themselves with a green image, while at the same time they don't address the low wages, the sweatshop conditions that occur in many of these outsourced venues?
Yeah, you got a whole spectrum from, at the one end, just the ExxonMobil, screw the environment types, to super green at the other end. And then along the way, there's a lot of movement with that. It starts with greenwashing, where they're spending more money on the propaganda promoting the reform than the actual reform itself. And then you got companies that are really, really committed to this because they're thinking about their grandchildren. You know, a lot of them are run by guys in their 60s, 70s. They're starting to think about legacy and what they're leaving for the planet. And that's why we got into this thing of trying to merge the social justice and the environment. If I can read you one piece, mm-hmm. we say, ecology teaches that all living things are interconnected. That insight can prompt an expansion of the definition of green so that green also comes to mean empathy and solidarity, compassion and kindness. Ecological thinking says that we cannot afford to sacrifice the sweatshop worker or the sea turtle because those living beings are part of us and we are dependent on them whether we realize it or not. So it's this integrative, holistic thinking. And what a lot of these business people, the hipper business people, are realizing is you can actually structure your business plan in a way that being good to the environment and other people, not exploiting nature, not exploiting humans, can increase your financial bottom line if it's done right. So once you cross that boundary into a region where ecological thinking increases your profits, where you can make more profit saving nature than destroying nature, that's a different system. That's a different mentality and a different business model.
And just one more hit from this press release. I'm amused by it. They list what they call outsourcing's Green 50, the top honor roll. So on the one hand, these are companies that are busy decimating, you know, the American workforce by outsourcing the jobs, and then they're getting praised for doing it in a green manner.
They mentioned where education comes in, because the very same people who tend to shop at Walmart are the same working class people whose jobs are being shipped to China.
Yeah.
We've got to educate people about the way this system works. And if we allow the system to be run solely on a single bottom line of profitability and we don't include social equity and environmental restoration, we're going to be screwed. I just saw last night Leo DiCaprio's new film, The 11th Hour.
Yeah.
And, you know, about 20% at the end is all the good green stuff that's happening, but about 80% of it is we're in deep doo-doo. The topsoil, the ocean water, the drinking water, the air, the asthma rates, all this, all the biological systems that prop us up and make life, human life possible, are getting trashed. So there's this growing recognition that we got to change direction, because every day when people pick up the newspaper, they see Greenland is melting, and just Greenland alone, forget the Arctic and the Antarctic, just Greenland will raise ocean levels over 20 feet. So Treasure Island in San Francisco, Lennar Corporation out of Florida is talking about billions of dollars of investment. It's 8 feet above sea level, Treasure Island. You better be building some big levees. You know?
Yeah, well, they can use the plans that weren't implemented in New Orleans.
You know, notice Donald Trump is selling his mansion down in West Palm Beach because it's about 12 feet above sea level. Maybe he reads books.
That's I think it's near Key Largo, right?
No, it's not in the Keys, actually. It's in West Palm Beach. It's
You know, I drove past it. I think it's called Key Largo.
Mar-de-Lago.
Mar-de-Lago. Oh, yeah, there we
Mar-de-Lago.
Go. Yeah, they didn't invite me in.
I'm shocked. I would think you'd be at the top of his guest list.
Oh, indeed. We're going to take a break and continue with Kevin Danaher. And when we return, I want to ask how we hold on to the integrity of the green movement and what green really means as corporate entities, like the press release I just read reflects, try to co-opt the green identity and use it for their propaganda purposes. If you have a question or a comment, you can bring it on right now. Call us from your Prius, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. Kevin Danaher's new book is Building the Green Economy, Success Stories from the Grassroots. We'll continue in a moment.
9 a.m. to noon. Thanks for joining us. The Ed Schultz Show, where America comes to talk.
The Grove Market in Pacific
Miguel Sarmiento,
Grove is ideal
owner and chef
for all
of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey.
Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family,
Mexican food prepared
the Grove
with
Market boasts the finest
sauces,
selections of just-picked conventional and organic
service.
Produce our Central Coast
Miguel
farms
has more than
have
14
to offer.
Years of experience preparing
the Grove Market's
full-service
meat department
French,
specializes
dishes,
in the highest quality,
in restaurants
choice, fresh-cut, and
County.
Prepared meats.
Looking to
local
save
artisanal
the
bakeries
Mexicali
deliver breads and other delectable baked goods,
fine,
hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked
today.
Meal, choose from the Grove Market's
Lighthouse
outstanding
Avenue
selection of Monterey wines.
Avenue in New
the
Monterey.
Grove Market features
the Mexicali
competitive
Grill
prices,
is open daily
personalized
for lunch,
service,
from
and home delivery
and
in PG and New Monterey.
Takeout orders,
you can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The
todos
Grove
son
Market,
en
we're
Mexicali
the local
Grill.
Shop.
Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Terry MacArthur of Clarion Mortgage is a lifelong resident of Monterey County and a truly dedicated, caring real estate and mortgage professional. With many years of experience, Terry always goes the extra mile for her clients. During your initial consultation, Terry gets to know your preferences and needs, and then helps you choose the loan program that most precisely meets them. Terry takes the time to explain all details of the various options open to you, including any potential risks, and guides you through the mortgage process. If you're too swamped at your desk to stop by during the work hours, make a weekend appointment with Terry or see her after hours. Terry MacArthur is your real estate and mortgage professional. Her offices are conveniently located in Salinas at 1271 North Davis Road, just across from Applebee's. Call Terry at 578-0773, 831-578-0773. Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com. Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and a note for our listeners in Portland on 620 KPOJ. Coming up in the next segment, we'll be joined by Jeremiah Bauman of Environment Oregon. Wants to talk to you about some key amendments to Measure 37 to try to reduce development. And in particular, he wants to protect the Willamette Valley. Had a great Willamette Pinot Noir last night. Well, that's my self-interest there. We continue with Kevin Danaher. As we mentioned, there's a new book out he co-authored called Building the Green Economy, Success Stories from the Grassroots. And it's chock full of inspiration and ideas, things that go beyond some of the normal alternative energy, alternative foods issues. And I recommend it to you. A lot of great information in it. Kevin, the question I posed before the break, we've seen that, for example, the whole term organic has been mangled over the last decade or so as our federal government wrestled with very loose rules promoted by the big agribusiness interests. And I'm concerned that the term green is going to be corrupted in a similar way. And we need like a council of elder greens or something like that to kind of give an imprimatur to real and credible efforts to protect our environment and the related issues? Or do you have some other way we can try to call out those who attempt to manipulate or abuse the term and the concepts?
Yeah, I think all of these terms are end up being tug of war. The corporate types are trying to water it down, to lower the standards, to do the greenwashing, to do the minimalist. Global Exchange has done a lot of corporate pressure campaigns. We were involved in rebranding Nike as the sweatshop shoe company. We pressured Starbucks to start buying fair trade certified coffee beans. And these companies just sort of genetically will always try to do the minimalist. They'll always try to comply as little as possible. And you got to dog them. You just got to stay on their tail. You can't get them to change a policy and then walk away and think that, oh, everything's going to be fine now. You got to come back and escalate your demands. We have a section in the book called Business Unusual, Can We Buy Change? And we deal with this contradiction of there's a trend toward green business. Some of those businesses are really genuine. They see that we're destroying the planet. We need to go in a really green direction. And others are going to do the greenwashing thing. And they need to be exposed. If you look at the green festivals, we have a really tight screen. Most of the big corporations can't get into the green festival. We wouldn't let them in.
An example is BP, which has tried to call itself Beyond Petroleum. They've invested in solar power in Southern California. At the same time, they refuse to fix their leaky pipelines, and they're polluting the Alaska wilds.
Yep, and Shell is getting big into solar energy. But see, here's the other side of the contradiction is the fact that they're investing in those alternative energies and the fact that they're using green language is a genuflection toward our values. In a sense, they're affirming that we're right. It reminds me of, I did my doctoral dissertation on U.S. policy to South Africa. The U.S. government, you say, we abhor apartheid. Apartheid's a terrible system, but, and then would be the excuse of, well, we need the minerals, and Mandela's a communist, and, you know, that would be the excuse of why they need to keep supporting the white minority regime. But the first part of the statement verified and strengthened our arguments, and we used it in the movement to say, look, even the U.S. government that supports white minority rule, that's awful. So these people, I think what we need to do is take their rhetoric and spin it back and throw it back at them and say, okay, look, here's what you said in your sustainability plan, but you're not living up to it, and mm-hmm. here's what you need to do. So I like the combination. At Global Exchange, we do a combination of the pressure campaigns, don't do that, but then we do the Green Festival and Global Citizen Center and all this green, and the Green Economy book to say, look, here's the direction you should be going in. And what we point out in the book is that you've got people complying or getting into it at different levels. Some people are super green. Other people, they're buying a frozen organic dinner at Whole Foods, and that's their entry level. Or they're switching out their light bulbs for compact fluorescents. Or they're feeding organic food to their kids, to their babies, because they've read some article. Okay, that's the entry point. That's the first step. And then you take them the next step and the next step. And I see it going on, particularly in the building industry. If somebody said, what sector of the U.S. economy has been most penetrated by green, I wouldn't hesitate to say building. Because you're starting to see now where you can make a building be more profitable by building it green at the outset, because it's going to lower your operating costs.
Mm-hmm.
Over 80% of the lifetime cost of a building is your people. So if you're an owner-occupier and if you're concerned about the health and productivity and absenteeism of your workers, then you build it green because it's going to pay off in the long run.
It's a great book. It kicks off with the story of Margie Richard, who took on Shell in Norco, Louisiana, racist pollution and bad neighbors there, and goes on to talk about our seed stock and how farmers in North Dakota beat Monsanto at the game that Monsanto has taken on to control the seed stocks and then corrupt them with genetically modified versions. So I want to recommend this book, Building the Green Economy, Success Stories from the Grassroots. Kevin Danaher, is there a website for the book?
They can get the book right off the Global Exchange website. If you go to globalexchange.org, the book's right there on the landing page.
And it includes a blurb from our friend Tom Hartman, too. So it's really well packaged. Thank you, Kevin.
Great being on with you, Peter. Thanks a lot.
Nice to talk with you again. Kevin Danaher, doing a great job there. And don't forget to visit globalexchange.org, too. They're doing a lot of good work. Coming up next, we'll check out the situation in Oregon. Jeremiah Bauman from Environment Oregon will join us to talk about amendments to your Measure 37. We'll find out more in a moment. Here on the Peter B. Collins Show, produced by Katrina Rill.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Two great Chinese restaurants, two great locations, one great American name. Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Personally, I love the chow fun noodles. Jim's Restaurant is now celebrating its 8th anniversary at 1584 Del Monte. Join the party. Buy lunch or dinner for four at Jim's in Seaside and get a free order of tempura vegetables. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117 for a great takeout.
Jim's Restaurant in Prunedale is a local treasure. Jim's owner and chef, Stephen Lowe, has over 20 years of experience in renowned San Francisco restaurants. Chef Lowe provides his loyal clientele with the best of East meets West, including the finest steaks in Monterey County. Chef Lowe enhances classic American and Chinese dishes with delicious French and Italian entrees and sauces. Jim's Restaurant in Prunedale transcends categories with a unique pace-setting menu and family-friendly prices. Jim's in Prunedale is open daily for lunch and dinner. Stop by 8069 San Miguel Canyon Road or call Chef Stephen Lowe at 663-4888 for carryout to die for.
I found a Sunday school program for my children, one that has helped them develop their own system of beliefs and has taught them ethics and justice.
My partner and I were brought up in different faiths. The Unitarian Universalists welcome us both and honor our roots.
With so much division in our country, I found a congregation where people with different beliefs could gather as one. Unitarian Universalists seek wisdom from all the world's religions.
We were so caught up in our careers. We needed a faith community to bring us back in touch with the important things in life. We joined the Unitarian Universalists.
Unitarian Universalists believe in respect, freedom, and justice for all people. Come visit our church in the Monterey Peninsula at 490 Aguajito Road at the top of Carmel Hill. Visit our website at uucmp.org or call 624-7404.
Hey, this is Larry from Acme Coffee, and if, like me, you own a business and are tired of waiting through aggressive sales reps pushing you to advertise on mediocre network TV stations or stale radio broadcasters, contact KRXA 540 sales manager Larry Rathall at 394-5792. AM 540's committed listener base will help you grow your business. I know, because they're helping me grow mine. Call Larry at 394-KRXA.
Tired of stale syndicated right-wing blowhards?
And we are thrilled and honored to have with us Donald Rumsfeld.
You got a bunch of dopey kids watching these shows. Oh, Ed O'Reilly! Oh.
Here on KRXA 540, you can hear a fresh local liberal blowhard.
And another thing, you could strip me naked, stake me to an anthill, pour honey all over me, and I still wouldn't vote for a Republican.
Hal on the show, only on KRXA 540. Down in Monterey.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Never met a girl that makes me feel as good as you do. You're right. Never a man who makes my dreams real. I say that you do. You're out of sight. Here I come, and I'm bringing you love that's true, so
Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. It's good to have you listening. Have I mentioned my email address? You can always reach me and drop me a note. Let me know what you think of the show. Let me know your thoughts about subjects and viewpoints that you hear. And feel free to suggest topics or guests that you think would be a good fit here on the PBC show. My email is easy, peter@peterbcollins.com. Or humblehost@peterbcollins.com. Or if you disagree with me, try full of it. It's just full of it. There's no SH in there. Full of it at peterbcollins.com. And you're always welcome to call if you're listening live here. 888-5-PETER-B is our toll-free number. We got the glitches out of our telephone system, so do join us if you like. 888-573-8372. Joining me now is Jeremiah Bauman. He's advocate for Environment Oregon, grew up in Montana, spent his childhood in Pasco, Washington, and he joined Environment Oregon staff in the spring of 05 after working on the national staff of the state public interest resource group's New Voters Project, where he directed strategic planning and non-student outreach efforts and worked on that campaign. And as director of the state PIRG's Federal Toxics and Environmental Health Program from 2000 to 2003, he directed successful campaigns to expand EPA right-to-know regulations, requiring thousands of companies to start disclosing toxic pollution to the public. And he also developed a chemical plant security campaign to require chemical companies to adopt safer chemicals and processes, particularly after 9/11. Jeremiah Bauman, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Nice to talk with you, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. You're traveling on the East Coast this week, is that right?
That's right. I'm in Boston for the week.
Not bad. I love Boston, so get a little chowder from me, will you?
I will do.
Okay. Now, tell us first of all about Measure 37. I'm sure many of our listeners in Oregon are quite familiar with it, but we have people like me and my listeners here in California who aren't as familiar with the details of some of your ballot measures from the past.
Sure. Well, one important piece of context is that, you know, Oregon has a landscape of forests and farms and open space that is unique and, you know, frankly kind of amazing in a couple of ways. One is just that it is so beautiful. I mean, you can get a very easy access from the cities throughout the state into the mountains, into the forest, out to these fertile farmlands. But the other thing that's unique about that is that because we've protected these open spaces, we've had a smart strategy for planning where cities grow, so we're not just having subdivisions leapfrogging a lot across the landscape. And we have, you know, cities growing aren't in controlled and planned way. Well, Measure 37 came along back in 2004, and it basically proposed that the government should have to pay people whenever land use planning reduces their property value.
Oh, so that's based on the takings concept.
That's exactly right. It basically equates statewide planning for where we do and do not want subdivisions and strip malls with reducing people's property value and taking their property away. And, you know, the campaign featured lots of stories of, you know, elderly Oregonians who have had farms in their family for years and years telling these stories about how they just wanted to build a home or two for their kids in their farmland, but these land use planning rules were preventing them from doing it. And so telling people that's why they should support Measure 37 just to provide basic fairness to family farmers and to family landowners.
And how much, how much did the supporters of Measure 37 spend to get this passed, and where did the money come from, Jeremiah?
Well, that's a very good question. They spent, I believe the figure was right around $3 million. I can't remember the exact number. Ballot measures are a little less expensive in Oregon than they are in California.
Yeah.
But the, you know, funding really revealed what was actually going on with Measure 37, which is the money was coming from developers who wanted to build subdivisions of strip malls, and it was coming from timber companies, including a lot of out-of-state timber companies who own forest land in Oregon. They decided they can make a bigger buck if they turn it into subdivisions of strip malls.
And were there any right-wing think tanks that framed the proposition? Because this whole idea of regulations as takings has been, fancied by some of the right-wingers, some of the so-called wise use movement, some of the evangelicals who believe that Armageddon is on the way and we've got to use up all of our resources before Judgment Day. Was this driven by any of those groups?
It was really led by a group called Oregonians in Action, which focuses primarily on the property rights issue and really, you know, brought that taking frame into it from that perspective. But I think even, you know, I think even Oregonians who believe in basic property rights and property rights fairness to some extent got sold a bill of goods by out-of-state timber companies and developers. Because what we're seeing now, because Measure 37 passed, we're now seeing 750,000 acres of Oregon's landscape proposed for development. Everything from subdivisions and strip malls up and down our fertile farmlands in the Willamette Valley to pumice mines in the middle of a volcanic national monument out in central Oregon to a golf course on one of the last pristine salmon runs at the Sixes River in southwest Oregon.
But what, and, Jeremiah, what's wrong with that? Because isn't everybody holding a God-given right to build their own McMansion wherever they want?
That's a really good question. I think what's wrong with that is Oregonians are losing the place that they love. You know, you're literally seeing we've got farmers calling us saying, tell me what I can do to help. I voted for Measure 37. I thought this was about saving the family farm. But it's not saving the family farm. I've got developers bringing in subdivisions on every single side of my farm, and they're threatening my water supply.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so the tables have really been turned now, I think, and voters are realizing what was actually hidden beneath that simple-sounding ballot measure.
Mm-hmm. So what was the margin of victory for Measure 37?
It passed with 60% of the vote.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I think partially because, you know, frankly, a lot of the PR for this ballot measure was just misleading. People thought they were helping family farms and family landowners build a couple houses for their kids. They didn't think they were, you know, turning 30,000 acres of coastal forest into subdivisions.
And
that's what they're getting now.
Jeremiah, I'm looking at your website, and you have a comment here. In fact, two-thirds of Oregonians say today that Measure 37 should be fixed or repealed entirely. So people have had an awakening. Was there a pivotal event, or was this kind of just a gradual understanding of what it really meant?
No, there kind of was. There was a pivotal time frame. The claims to develop under Measure 37 started kind of dribbling in and sped up a little bit over the course of the first year or so, but it was really in late November of 2006 was one of the first hard deadlines into which anybody who had a claim to develop property that was because of a regulation from past proposals that had been passed. People had to just file those claims by a date in late November of 2006. So in those last 2 weeks, the number of claims, I think, almost doubled. Suddenly there were so many more properties being proposed, and a lot of the most extreme proposals came in right then. That's when you had Plum Creek Timber Company filed applications for 30,000 acres of coastal forest to turn into largely subdivisions. Stimson Lumber Company up near Portland filed to develop 36,000 acres near a great lake and great recreation spot west of the city. And so that, I think, really woke people up. And they're like, and that people said, I don't know what this is all about, but this is not what I voted for. And now I'm suspicious of Measure 37.
That sounds a little bit like a land rush.
It is. It was really a rush to develop.
Mm-hmm.
Unprecedented. I mean, I don't know that any state, no matter how big it is, would see, you know, it's now almost 1 million acres proposed to go from protected open space to subdivisions and strip malls. And all those proposals literally came in a matter of less than 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Now, the legislature in Oregon has passed House Bill 3540. Which is a package of reforms to Measure 37. Give us a quick sketch here, Jeremiah, of how it would fix some of the most egregious parts of the previous ballot measure.
Absolutely. And that bill is now actually called Measure 49, and it's on the ballot to be voted on this November in a special election across the state of Oregon.
And just a quick question about that. In a special election with low turnout, do you think that favors your side? Or makes it more difficult?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, what it really means is people that care about Oregon have got to get out and vote, because in a low turnout election, whichever side gets the most people out to vote is probably going to win.
Right.
But it's really about which side has the most, you know, kind of dedicated supporters. And so that's kind of why our organization is focused on getting the word out that, mm-hmm, if you care about keeping our forests and our farms and our open space intact, you should make sure and vote yes on 49.
Now, I'm a Californian, but I have a soft spot for the Willamette Valley. I had a great Pinot from there last night. And so that's
well,
my...
Well, that's also, you know, it's the Willamette Valley vineyards, and the vineyard owners are really some of the biggest supporters of Measure 49 because, you know, they depend a lot on having access to enough water, and they don't want... people that come to a vineyard to go wine tasting don't exactly want to do so in the middle of strip malls and subdivisions.
Right, yeah. So I digress there. Tell us what the key elements are of this new Measure 49, which came out of House Bill 3540.
Absolutely. So Measure 49, what it does, what it would do if we can pass it, is it protects our forests and farmlands by putting common sense limits on what can be developed and what kinds of development can go forward under Measure 37, while maintaining the basic notion of fairness for small landowners. So it basically says what you can do is if you want fewer than three houses on a large rural property, you can go forward with that, assuming that you could have built those when you bought the property. If you want more than three, first of all, you don't get more than 10 if it's not allowed by our current planning and zoning policies, because we're not going to ruin our landscape over this. You can apply for up to 10, but you have to prove you actually lost property value because land use planning rules prevented you from building those homes.
Mm-hmm.
That's really critical, because most economists say most people have probably actually gained in property value because their land is more valuable as open space and as farm and as forest land than it would be if it was surrounded by strip malls and subdivisions.
Mm-hmm.
And the final piece just says the most damaging development, the pumice mines, the gravel pits, the strip malls, can't go forward. That's not what voters were voting for with Measure 37. So commercial and industrial claims aren't going to be allowed.
Mm-hmm. Now, coming back to the takings issue and compensation for perceived losses over development rights, et cetera, this is a difficult area once a bill like this is enacted. We've seen here in California where we were successful in defeating Richard Pombo, who chaired the House Resources Committee and was a leading guy trying to eviscerate the Endangered Species Act and promote this whole idea of compensating landowners for imagined, often, losses. How do we rein this in, and how does Measure 49 attempt to deal with that, Jeremiah?
I think it does it in two ways. Well, I guess Measure 49 does it in one specific way, which is it actually asks people to put their money where their mouth is, I guess. If you want to actually claim that you have suffered a taking, that you have suffered a loss in property value because of open space protection,
mm-hmm.
You have to actually prove that. You have to be an assessor to document that you've lost it because of the policy going into effect.
Yeah, but let's say I've got 100 acres and I just tell you and maybe even file some planning documents, I'm going to build a theme park there. And then you say, well, you can't do that. And I say, well, I would have made $100 million on a theme park, and I want you to give me the money.
Well, and that's exactly why, you know, to be honest, a lot of these takings, the people promoting this takings point of view and this copyright point of view, that's where it all starts to fall apart. When you look at Measure 37, it never actually had anybody prove they were lost any money. In fact, it didn't give the government any tool for challenging them. So you could say, I want to build 10 houses, and I would have made $100 million, so pay me $100 million, you'll let me build 10 houses.
Mm-hmm.
There's no tool for the government to just at least point out 10 houses aren't worth $100 million. There's no chance what you're saying makes any sense.
Yeah, some
that's
of those...
part of what Measure 49 does is say, all right, well, then prove it and show us where you lost the property value.
And no,
and
Holly...
the reality is they mostly didn't.
No Hollywood accounting permitted. Jeremiah, we got to take a break. We'll return in just a moment. We're talking with Jeremiah Bauman from Environment Oregon. And if you're listening in Coos Bay and you have a question or a comment, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Were you hoodwinked by Measure 37? And are you one of the two-thirds of Oregonians ready to fix it or repeal it today? And are you prepared to support Measure 49 in this special election in November? That's what I'd like to know, so get on the line and tell me. Lines are open for you right now, toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
Come on in and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scone. Everything so tasty you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a good affair.
We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus stew. A side of couscous and a bottle of galusha. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery.
In PG. For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Ropp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective here on KRXA 540.
Tom Hartman.
That his goal is to create what he refers to as, using Karl Rove's words, a permanent Republican majority. That is referred to in other countries as single-party rule.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
That's what you have, you know, with Mr. Gaddafi. You have single-party rule. It's what you have in Egypt, Saudi Arabia. It's what you had in the Soviet Union, single-party rule. And that's what these guys are trying to create.
Tom Hartman. Weekday mornings, 10 to noon, on KRXA 540.
Vote means that our investigation turned up nothing.
If somebody testifies by him before a grand jury, doesn't mean he's involved.
It is flat out absurd. Bush was begging that governor on the Sunday before the hurricane hit to get people out of there and to declare an emergency.
It's all crazy propaganda. The Joseph Goebbels Network.
Bush was on the phone with her. They were thinking about sending the military in because the state and local people weren't acting fast enough.
It is certain that some self-possessed judge somewhere will soon rule that three men or three women can rule.
Yet Iraqis are united in a broad and deep conviction. 12 government ministries are currently under the direct control of Iraqis. I don't think that's too high a standard.
If you retire, you don't have anything to worry about. Probably say it three more times. See, in my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in. You got to catapult the propaganda.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues. Coming up after the top of the hour, Brad Friedman. In our regularly weekly session about election integrity. And it's time to say bye-bye, Diebold. He'll explain. Continue now with Jeremiah Bauman. He is with Environment Oregon, and we're talking about Measure 49, which will be on the ballot in a special election this November statewide in Oregon. Is that one of those mail-in campaigns, Jeremiah?
Yeah, Oregon's elections are all vote by mail now.
Mm-hmm. And how is it shaping up at this point? Is your governor, Kulongoski, in support of this remedial effort, Measure 49?
Yes, Governor Kulongoski is a huge champion of Measure 49, as are two other former governors, Republican Governor Vic Atiyah and Democratic Governor Barbara Roberts, all three of them working together to promote Measure 49.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. And how is it polling at this point? Do you have any numbers?
Yeah, I haven't seen any recent numbers, but last we checked, it was polling very strongly, you know, easily more than half. As you mentioned, we know that 70% of Oregonians want Measure 37 repealed or fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of people out there that are hungry for exactly this kind of measure.
And have the corporate interests sallied in and ponied up? Are they getting ready to, you know, put on a barrage of advertising to try to kill it?
You know, we won't know for sure what exactly they're up to until the end of the month when the campaign finance reports are due. But we fully expect that the, you know, especially the bigger out-of-state timber companies coming in, they're looking at tens of millions of dollars in profits off of this, so spending a few hundred thousand or a few million to stop good land use protections is not a big deal for them.
Yeah. We saw a very disappointing effort last year in California. Stephen Bing from Los Angeles spent $30 or $40 million of his own money to put a measure on the ballot to put a wellhead tax on oil drilled in California. And it turns out 41% of the gas we consume comes from oil that's actually originating here in California. And the oil companies dumped $105 million, and they killed it. It died by like a 60-40 margin. And I just couldn't believe it at a time that our gas prices were going up. And, you know, the attitudes, the antagonism toward oil companies was at perhaps a recent peak. They succeeded in propagandizing and defeated handily.
Well, yeah, that's unfortunately in the era of TV-driven politics. Whoever can spend the most money on advertising very often wins. We ran a ballot measure about 10 years ago to expand our bottle bill to put a 5-cent recoverable deposit, not just on soda and beer, but add that to water bottles and juice bottles. That measure started out with 80% public support after the big beverage companies and food manufacturers came in and outspent us 10 to 1. It also got about 40% of the vote and failed.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Now, fortunately, there's a silver lining in that story, which is our legislature did just finally expand our bottle bill, so we are going to get an easier, more convenient way to recycle water bottles soon.
Well, I'm drinking out of a water bottle that has a nickel CRV on it. So I feel really, really good about that. What else can you tell us, Jeremiah, about the situation there and what Measure 49 might do?
Well, I think what's going to happen this fall is, you know, we're going to have a real debate in this state about what the future of Oregon's landscape is, and do we want to continue in a state that has really unequaled access to forests and amazing fertile farms and wine country and orchards throughout our state. And access to places like the Coast Range and the Cascades, or do you want to just start building subdivisions and strip malls like some other places have done willy-nilly across the countryside, destroying our landscape and taking up our groundwater? That's what this question is really about. And so we're going to spend the next couple of months out there going door-to-door, calling folks on the phone, raising money to be able to put some ads on TV, make sure people know what this is about and urge people to get out and vote yes on Measure 49.
Well, as you're describing it, I'm thinking of a TV commercial, and there's so many spots in California that you could use to depict that kind of ugly sprawl. Orange County is full of them. I'm thinking of Mission Viejo, which was once a beautiful landscape, and it's now covered with these ugly condos and townhouses that are all cookie cutter and strip malls one after another. Sacramento is just amazing in that way, where you know there's a Wendy's and a Burger King about every mile and a half on the main roads, and that's the kind of thing you're trying to prevent from occurring in some of the most pristine areas of Oregon.
That's right, and that's an example I actually use often in explaining to people what this is really about. I mean, to take a counterexample, in Oregon, Portland and Salem, our state capital, in two major cities. They're about 45 miles apart. In most states, and California prime among them, I assume, you couldn't drive up 40. There wouldn't be two major cities 45 miles apart that wouldn't by now be, that space between would be totally filled up with cookie cutter subdivisions and strip malls and sprawl everywhere you look. Well, in Oregon, about, I don't know, I'd say 75 or 80% of that drive, you're going past this amazing farmland. There's an iris farm that is famous. It blooms every spring, and the whole, for miles, the whole landscape turns into these amazing purple and blue and red colors of the irises blooming. There are Christmas tree farms. There are, rolling landscape, and you can see the volcanic peaks and the hills in the background. And it's just, an amazing place. We've managed to keep it that way as much as we have.
Well, send me a postcard the next time you're driving through. Jeremiah Bauman from Environment Oregon, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
And the website is environmentoregon.org. Keep us posted on Measure 49, will you?
Will do.
All right, Jeremiah, thank you. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The president makes a surprise Labor Day drop-in on the troops in Iraq.
America does not abandon our friends. And America will not abandon the Iraqi people.
For the first time, hard numbers on attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
More than 2 million American kids have ADHD. Most are undiagnosed. I'm Barry Bagnato in Washington.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Jim Taylor. President Bush with a surprise Labor Day stopover in Iraq and hints of a possible pullback.
If the kind of success we are now seeing continues, it will be possible to maintain the same level of security with fewer American forces.
The address in Anbar, province figuring prominently in the violence there.
It's vital that we work to bring America together, find a common vision for a more stable and more peaceful Middle East.
CBS News White House correspondent Peter Mayer.
The president's message was meant as much for voters at home and lawmakers as it was for the troops in the audience in Iraq. Mr. Bush said decisions would be made based on a calm assessment by his commanders and not what he described as poll-driven ideas from politicians at home.
One of those politicians at home, presidential candidate John Edwards.
We saw just this past couple of days a new report saying that August was the second most deadly month for civilians in Iraq. It's obvious the surge is not working. There's been no movement toward any political compromise between the Sunni and Shia. We need to start leaving Iraq.
The White House says the president has left Iraq, heading for Sydney. The long-term solution that everyone seeks there, could it be coming out of Finland? Well, maybe. 4 days of secret talks in Helsinki, about 30 representatives from Sunni and Shiite groups meeting, ending with an agreement on a roadmap to peace. Feuding parties studying lessons learned from successful peacemaking efforts in South Africa and Northern Ireland. Now this.
What if you could buy peace of mind? Well, you can with Ford Lincoln and Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles. Everyone must pass a 115-point inspection, and it's all backed by our 6-year, 75,000-mile warranty coverage. That's peace of mind. Now get 3.9% APR and select Ford or Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles. That's just 3.9%. Not all buyers qualify for Ford credit financing. Offer ends 9/30/07. See dealer for limited warranty details or visit FordCPO.com.
Can you guess which state Michelin Man is in? Having left Utah, he's on the aptly named Loneliest Road. He'll drive vast distances without anything in sight, including a gas pump. That's why he has Michelin Hydro-Edge tires. As the longest-lasting, most fuel-efficient tires in their category, they're just right for lonely roads and high gas prices. For more on Hydro-Edge tires and to see which state Michelin Man is in, visit MichelinMan.com/guesswhere.
Michelin, a better way forward.
Category defined as premium-priced S&T passenger products.
ADHD. A growing number of kids has it, but they're not always diagnosed with it. CBS's Barry Bagnato.
For the first time, a study pinpoints the number of American kids who meet the definition of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, 2.4 million, and more than half of them are not diagnosed or treated. The problem is missed most often in poor children and in girls.
It could be that when boys have ADHD, they're just more troublesome.
Dr. Tanya Freilich of Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center, lead author of this study in the Archives of Pediatrics and Adolescent Medicine.
We must redouble our efforts to help doctors spot the symptoms of ADHD and make an accurate diagnosis.
Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Happy Labor Day. Whether it's a block party or a family picnic, we are celebrating a day off today. Some of us are.
AFL-CIO President John Sweeney says it's not a happy holiday for a lot of Americans.
America isn't working the way it should be.
for working people. Housing foreclosures are rising. Wages are not rising. We're losing good jobs and gaining household debt.
But Labor Secretary Elaine Chao says things aren't that bad.
We've had over 8.2 million net new jobs created in the last 46 months.
Lots of us are laboring on this Labor Day, folks like Linda.
I'm a nurse and I work in the ER and it's the best job.
Surveys find the majority of Americans do enjoy their jobs, but many of us wish we were paid more. Sam Litzinger, CBS News.
Hundreds of tourists are leaving the island resorts of Honduras and Belize in a desperate airlift today. The pounding rains and punishing winds of Hurricane Felix bearing down on the Central American coast. Those winds actually weakening a bit, down to 145 miles an hour.
It's still an extremely dangerous category for hurricane, capable of widespread damage.
Eric Blake with the National Hurricane Center. Panama Canal getting a makeover. Biggest expansion since the canal opened in 1914. Work crews today blasting through an adjacent hillside to kick off the $5 billion project, expected to double capacity of the 50-mile-long engineering marvel. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Tuesday's done, oh no worries, Wednesday's perfect to unwind. Let's go out back tonight.
Let go this summer with two new No Worries Wednesday mixed grills. Our classic grilled seafood and steak or our bold barbecue mixed grill. Enjoy two new mixed grills.
Let's go out back tonight.
Now you can order curbside takeaway online at outback.com. Just click and pick up.
Hi, I'm Reggie Bush of the New Orleans Saints. If you live for football like I live for football, all you got to do is switch to Dish Network. Get football 24/7 on the NFL Network on Dish Network.
Get in the game with Dish Network and get over 100 of the hottest channels for only $29.99 a month. Get the best sports and movies in HD with a free HD DVR upgrade and free HD programming for 6 months. Call 1-888-770-DISH today. Offer ends 1/31/08 and is subject to change without notice. Requires $49.99 activation fee and 18-month commitment. Restrictions apply.
Barry.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Thanks for joining us. It's 6 minutes after the hour. And just to prevent any confusion, I am speaking to you here on Monday, and we are live the day that Alberto Gonzalez announced his resignation. And the same hour will be rebroadcast on Labor Day on Monday. So if you're listening on Labor Day, don't try to call. But if you're listening before Labor Day, you can call. My toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B.
This ain't no technological breakdown. Oh, no, this is the road to hell.
We're going to spend this hour with Kyle Hentz, who has been seeking the truth about 9/11 for many years. He has been a representative and spokesperson for the 9/11 truth movement through the families, the Jersey girls and others, survivors, who lost loved ones in the attacks on September 11th. He is a producer of the documentary 9/11 Press for Truth and a founder of 9/11 Citizens Watch. That website's still up at 9/11citizenswatch.org.
Recreating it. There was some technical glitches at my host company, and
okay.
That was a bit of a fiasco.
So. All right, then I won't direct people there today. But
our website for our film, 911presswithtruth.com.
Right, that is still up and available, and it's a powerful documentary that asks a lot of important questions that we still don't have answers to. And Kyle, I'm delighted you can join us today. A little bit later, I want to get your comments on the prospects that Michael Chertoff, who is a former assistant attorney general, and now is the director of Homeland Security, that cabinet-level post, that he may be in the running to replace Alberto Gonzalez. We'll get to that a little bit later. But first, I wanted you to give us your first-person account. Over this past weekend, you were in Bush territory in Kennebunkport, Maine.
Yes, Kennebunkport. That's Walker Point is the summer home of Bush Sr. And I think the original schedule had our current president stopping over for a visit at this time, but there was the wedding. He came a little earlier, so he wasn't there when we were there, but there were about 4,000 people, many whom were bused in from Boston and Providence and other places. Biggest rally ever, actually, in Kennebunkport. It was a great showing, a beautiful day, and some great music. The Indigo Girls played. David Rovics, who's extraordinary, played. Cynthia McKinney, a former representative from Georgia, gave a fiery speech. She always does. And
she didn't whack anybody with her cell phone.
No.
No. Okay.
She was well behaved, but principled, and also representative and current Democratic candidate president Dennis Kucinich was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I caught up with him after his speech, and I caught up with Representative McKinney, who I knew from her time in the House when I was working with her, lobbying her on the 9/11 issue.
Mm-hmm.
I met the night before at a fundraiser in Yarmouth, Maine. So
mm-hmm.
it was a great weekend, and she's working. Believe it or not, this is a sad commentary on the state of politics. She's one of the most principled politicians anywhere, and
mm-hmm.
That's ever served in Congress, as far as I'm concerned. And she, no fear, standing up to the powers that be and taking principled positions. But she was twice run out of Congress because of the Republican crossover vote in Georgia in primaries. She's working to retire her debt. She, right before she left Congress, she filed the first bill of impeachment of Bush and Cheney.
That's right.
I learned that 5 days later, the Federal Election Commission launched a audit of her books.
Isn't that nice?
They have done, I think, three audits since, two or three since, finding different excuses to hassle her. But I think she was off by, I think, less than $2.
Hmm.
So.
Well, that demands a thorough investigation.
Yeah, right. Well, she's close to retiring her debt, and we haven't seen the last of Cynthia McKinney.
Now, Kyle Hentz, you also referenced that presidential candidate Dennis Kucinich was there, and to his credit, he's the sponsor of H.R. 333, which calls for the impeachment of Dick Cheney, 15 co-sponsors that I'm aware of to date. We no longer have to worry about impeaching Gonzalez. There was a bill in the hopper for that as well. But one of the things that many progressives have had some concerns about is that Dennis Kucinich indicated that he was going to call some hearings. He chairs a Homeland Security subcommittee, and he was going to call some hearings to try to help us get to the bottom of some of the murky issues about what really happened on 9/11. And the last time I spoke to him about it, he seemed very reluctant. He didn't want to promote the idea. He really didn't even want to talk about it on the air. I could tell he was not enthusiastic about the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And so on the one hand, I give him a lot of credit because he's been fearless in taking on the Bush administration on many fronts. But he seems to be pulling his punches about investigating 9/11. What did you find out from talking with him? And do you know if he has plans to conduct the hearings we thought he would call?
Well, my read on the situation is this. He's been looking at this issue for a long time. And I surmise, you know, I don't know this from horse's mouth, so to speak, but that he is continuing to look into it and perhaps hasn't gotten to a level of confidence to speak publicly about it. I think he's I think he's always had some reluctance of taking this on because there is so much wild and crazy speculation out there that that just wanders too far and that sort of meanders away from the facts, you know, rather than, and I think his concern is that being lumped in with those that have been pretty effectively smeared, labeled conspiracy theorists and so on. So I just think he's just a little nervous about it, and my hope is that he will follow through. I mean, he has said it so so many times, not on a national scene or not on a, you're certainly not on Meet the Press or any of the major networks or cable networks, but local, in local appearances, he has been caught on tape, if you will, saying that he's going to look into a number of financial issues pertaining to 9/11. And so I expect him to keep his word. At this, I just don't know. I don't believe that, that there's time yet to put it together before the 11th. But my hope is that we will be hearing from him in September at some point, hopefully sooner rather than later, in which he will announce formally, you know, that he will proceed with hearings. Just for your, he's the chairman of a subcommittee under Waxman's Oversight Committee, not Homeland Security.
Okay.
There's a domestic policy subcommittee, and he chairs that. And so I'm hopeful that he will follow through, he will keep his word, and that we will get the first, what will be the very first oversight hearings since the 9/11 Commission released its report.
Well, I certainly understand, because having raised questions about 9/11, I have friends, particularly people who live in Washington, who think I'm just crazy. And who have friends who saw a plane fly into the Pentagon that day, and they don't want to hear anything further. And I also understand that Dennis Kucinich, in this go-round as a candidate for the 08 Democratic presidential nomination, has found himself more mainstream, that his views on health care, on the war, on domestic wiretapping are, you know, much more mainstream than they were perceived to be when he ran in 2004. And so I can understand he's trying to build on that, and he would like to be president. And if he became president, he could do a lot of good for progressive issues, including those who seek the truth about 9/11. So I'm not accusing him of double dealing or bad faith, but I do understand that these are thorny issues, explosive issues in some respects, and that people tread very lightly around them.
No doubt he would be at the pointy end of a very fierce attack on his sanity or what have you if he does step out on this, and he has to be prepared. And I imagine with all the balls he's juggling from, you know, between being a member of Congress and putting forward bills and getting co-sponsors and at the same time running a campaign and traveling, he's just got a lot on his plate. And I just, you know, my hope is that he follows through on his word, but most importantly, he puts the best foot forward, and that he and his staff are able to assemble the facts in a compelling way to look at the public record to and identify the omissions pertaining to the finance.
Oh, let's see if we
good options, et cetera, and that he does it right, so it comes across credibly and forcefully.
All right. Kyle, we're going to take a break here. When we return, I want to talk about the investigation you've done into the financial aspects, those airline stock options that were taken out just before September 11th, 01. And I also want to talk with you about the Inspector General of the CIA, who issued a scathing report last week, although it wasn't so scathing that anybody has to worry about his or her job or actually being blamed for what went wrong. And a little bit later, we'll get your views on the prospects of Michael Chertoff moving from Homeland Security back over to the Justice Department as Bush's next Attorney General. If you have a question or comment for Kyle Hintz, he's with us this entire hour. And you can call in right now, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That number again is 888-573-8372. Email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. KRXA 540. Visit our website at krxa540.com. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
I'm Pam.
And I'm Nancy.
And we're from the Potting Shed.
In Aptos. We're located at 5752 Freedom Boulevard.
About 2 miles east of Highway 1 heading towards Watsonville. You have to look for us. We're in an old barn, but if you look for our mailbox, it's painted bright yellow and it's shaped like an old barn, so it makes it a little bit easier to find.
The barn has a lot of charm. People tend to come there just because the atmosphere is really nice.
And they'll come and have a cup of tea, bring their dog if they have one. All the dogs who visit know exactly where the cookie jar is. So it's that kind of a place. See, people feel very comfortable.
When we started, we were just strictly a garden shop with pots and plants, but we had to evolve through the years because nobody needed pots and plants in the middle of winter. So we started adding things, and now it's a full-fledged gift shop.
We work very hard to try and find things that are unusual and eclectic and well-priced. That's what our customers want. We're open from 10 to 5, Wednesday through Sunday. Come by, have a cup of tea. The Potting Shed.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside. We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. My guest is Kyle Hentz, seeking the truth about 9/11.
The world watched in horror. Two hijacked planes destroyed our trade center.
Or something like that.
You better believe it. We better deal with it. It's time to keep your secrets.
Yoko Ono with Give Peace a Chance 04. And we continue now with Kyle Hentz. If you have a question or comment about what happened on 9/11, what we know, what we don't know, feel free to give us a call. It's toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Well, Kyle, as I referenced, the Inspector General of the Central Intelligence Agency finally released a report. It was completed back in 2005, if I'm not mistaken. But, well, they wanted to age it properly, like a fine Cabernet.
Yeah, they kept the kibosh on that one for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And what did prompt the release, in your opinion?
You know, I read, Peter, that there was a law passed, I think this summer, earlier this year, I'm sorry, I can't even cite the law or the date, but
I just read in passing that there was a law that compelled its release, and I don't know, you know, maybe it was laid onto a law that, you know, President Bush couldn't afford to veto or what have you, but I think it was something that was they were compelled to do. Of course, we're looking at 19 pages out of a report that I think is close to 300. So, I mean, we're only getting a tiny slice. It's been redacted. And this is the Inspector General's report from the CIA that only looks at what happened before September 11th.
Mm-hmm. Can you lean into your phone a little bit there, Kyle? It's fading a little bit.
Speak into the phone? Yeah.
There you go.
There you go. Okay.
That's a Chinese-made cordless phone, isn't it?
Yes, it is. How did you know?
I can tell. I have special systems here. So in this report, I've read news accounts of it. I haven't read the report itself or the 19 pages that were made available to the public. But the gist of it is that there were many attempts to get the attention of the CIA. They were not communicating with the FBI in any meaningful way. And while George Tenet, you know, got the Medal of Freedom and claims to have been really working hard to protect America, it really seems that the ball was dropped on his watch. And yet still today, 2007, almost 6 years after the original events, nobody has really been held responsible for the way our defenses were totally skunked on that day.
That's right. That's right. I mean, you're looking at a pattern that, you know, I mean, you hear these debates about, you know, about 9/11, you know, about folks that say, you know, the government was complicit or there was insider complicity versus, oh, you know, the official line that this was a case of systemic breakdown or failure of imagination or incompetence. And I like to tell folks that I have a chance to speak to about this is that, you know, sure, there's no doubt there was incompetence surrounding the many, many failures or breakdowns or what have you. They can exist side by side. You can have negligence, criminal negligence, incompetence, or even insider complicity. All can coexist or perhaps coexist or coincided on 9/11. But what I looked at in this report is, and this is prompted really by the work of Kristen Breitweiser, one of the more prominent 9/11 widows, part of the so-called Jersey Girls. And Kristen wrote in a blog, when Able Danger details came out, that was a data mining program under the DIA auspices that had ID'd four of the alleged 19 hijackers way back in, I think, late 2000. And that prompted her to examine again Al-Hazmi and Al-Adar, the case of the two hijackers who lived in San Diego,
right,
because they were also part of the four. Most of the reports, if you'll recall about Able Danger, when it came up and Representative Weldon brought it to the nation's attention, you mentioned Atta, but failed to mention the other three, and two of whom were Al-Hazmi, Nawaf Al-Hazmi, and the other fellow, Al-Madar, Khalid Al-Madar. And they were at the infamous Malaysian terrorist summit that the CIA was surveilling. And they supposedly lost track of the two once they left Malaysia when they went to Singapore. And then they were meant to be put on a watch list, but ended up arriving in the U.S. with no trouble and ended up living with a FBI informant. And anyway, as you can imagine, Kristen Breitweiser being in the middle of the whole campaign for a commission and then following the work of the commission, she got to meet a lot of people who were following all of this quite closely and would hear things that maybe you and I wouldn't hear, you know, through the course of her lobbying and following the commission's work. And she documented seven different times in which Al-Madar and Al-Hazmi, you know, in which authorities, you know, basically, quote, missed opportunities or what have you. And, and she explains in her blog at Huffington Post, which you can go to HuffingtonPost.com, search for Kristen Breitweiser, and you'll see the Able Danger story, that one or two or even three times, Peter, she could chalk up to, what did she call it, incompetence or just the carelessness. But seven documented times, she concluded that this must be purposeful. So with someone being protected, were Nawaf Hazmi and Almodar, were they being protected? Who were they?
We'll pick up there as we continue in just a moment with Kyle Hintz. We'll go to the phones, too, at 888-5-PETER-B. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. With just 2 weeks left in California's legislative session, leaders in both houses are working on a health care reform bill that would require employers to provide health insurance. The California Labor Federation's Art Pulaski.
Employers would pay 7.5% of payroll up to the maximum of Social Security taxable income, which is, what, about $96,000. And then employers would either have to provide coverage for their employees or put that money, equivalent amount of money, into a pot, whereby the state would have a large risk pool available for people who are not provided insurance directly by their employers.
Pulaski says a single-payer universal health care bill did not advance in the California legislature, but there's a real chance that this one will.
The discussions are becoming intense between the leadership and the governor in terms of how we negotiate this bill out, and so I expect that we're going to see some more significant progress over the next week.
New York City's sea of yellow cabs could come to a halt next week. Jesse Russell reports.
The 48-hour strike will happen on September 5th and 6th if the New York City Taxi and Limousine Commission move forward with plans to install GPS tracking technology in all taxis. More than 10,000 cabbies make up the New York Taxi Workers Alliance, who announced the plans to move forward with the strike on August 23rd. During that press conference, Alliance spokesperson Bill Lindauer said taxi drivers are upset they have to pay for the GPS, which will track their every movement. As independent contractors, the taxi drivers consider it a violation of their privacy.
200 employees for Australian auto parts maker Venture returned to work on Wednesday, giving relief to Ford Motor Company, who had to stand down 1,800 workers without pay as that strike continued. Venture is moving the jobs from Melbourne and, according to union representatives, has reneged on an agreement to pay more than $25 million in entitlements. The employees returned to work after they lost legal protections. Ford had been asking the Australian government to become involved in the Venture dispute so Ford workers could return to the production lines. Venture has been given 1 week to settle the dispute. In a major blow to former Senator John Edwards, the International Association of Machinists endorsed Senator Hillary Clinton for president on Thursday. Edwards had expected to pick up the labor endorsement from the 700,000-strong industrial trade union. According to IAM President Tom Buffenbarger, the union chose Clinton because she is the only candidate of either party, he says, to come forward with a comprehensive manufacturing policy. The machinists also endorsed Republican candidate, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hi, this is Sheila Gale reminding you to listen in every Saturday for my show, 12-Step Talk Uncensored. Saturdays 4 to 5 p.m., honest talk about addictions and how recovery is possible. 12-Step Talk Uncensored. With addictions now the number one fastest rising disease in America, I mean all addictions, sex, food, gambling, alcohol, shopping, we are all affected. So listen in and call in. Saturdays 4 to 5 with me, Sheila Gale, brought to you by Sun Street Centers, prevention and recovery centers serving the Monterey Peninsula for over 30 years.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. We're talking with Kyle Hentz, a tireless seeker of the truth. I first met Kyle in Washington, D.C. I think it was in the spring of 2003. And I managed to get a copy. He gave me a copy of David Ray Griffin's book, The New Pearl Harbor, which I then handed off to Nancy Pelosi, who was a mere congresswoman at the time, and who accepted it like a box of chocolates. I think probably handed it off to an aide. But that's something I'll always remember, Kyle, is I met you outside one of the hearing rooms in the Hart Senate office building where the 9/11 Commission was conducting some of its public hearings. And
I remember our interview very well, and I remember Representative Pelosi was late, and so we started.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she arrived, you had her on for 5 or 10 minutes, and then I went back on again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I did not realize that you had given her a copy of that book.
Yeah. Yeah. I never got a response from her on, you know, whether she read it or had any comment on it.
No surprise there. You know, I put that book on the seat. Remember when, Citizens Watch was instrumental in getting Condi Rice to testify. We put ads in all of the metro cars, the metro system in D.C., and we put a lot of pressure on to have her testify. And then the day of her testimony, I was milling about. I played the role of cameraman, you know, taking pictures, and I went up and I put the book on the seat there for her. And unfortunately, about a minute before she came out, one of the staffers in the commission pulled it off.
We do what we can. Steve joins us from Salinas. Thanks for calling, Steve. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. I sound like a broken record, I think. One of these conspiracy theorists. I see like four possible levels of administration complicity. The first thing, they just ignored lots of warnings. Second, they knew things were going to happen but did nothing. Third, they helped the attackers. And fourth, they instigated the attack. We need to find out which one.
All right, Steve, that's enough.
Let me finish.
You sound like a broken record.
I know.
Hey, I'm just kidding you.
Okay.
I appreciate that you care about these issues and that you're thoughtful enough that you can tick off your priorities just like that.
But some things that came out, that 9/11 report, that CIA report, just should raise all kinds of red flags. Because I remember that Cheney made a whole bunch of visits to Tenet's office in August of 01, and Tenet gave Bush a daily briefing every day.
Let's remember that Cheney had been named to head Homeland Security even before, I guess it was just a committee assignment or a job assignment at the White House. But that was before we had any inkling that we might have a 9/11.
How is it possible that Tenet didn't tell these guys?
Well, let me turn to Kyle. Do you have an answer for George Tenet? Not that you channel George Tenet, but...
Could you repeat the question? I'm having a hard time hearing the
call. Oh, okay. Steve, repeat your question.
Well, how is it possible that Tenet did not tell Cheney and Bush about all these things that were happening?
I imagine that it was discussed. You know, in fact, it came out during the hearings, and this was something that I think was overlooked by the media. But it came out during his testimony that he had actually gone down to Crawford around the time that Massawi was picked up, and there's some speculation that there would have been some concern expressed or the issue raised at that point. Of course, this was after the August 6th presidential daily briefing. So I imagine that he did talk to someone there, whether vice president or not, but who knows? I mean, there's no way to know for sure.
Something that's really important, I think, is who, besides Bush and his cronies, has benefited from those attacks.
Well, in fact, Steve, let me hang up the line here so we can hear Kyle a little bit louder, and we'll come back to the Inspector General of the CIA's report. But, Kyle, I think this is a good opportunity for you to tell us that you've done more digging to try to understand options, puts and calls, and the various options that were played against United and American Airlines by some sort of investor or group of investors prior to 9/11.
It certainly wasn't a single investor because there was just too much activity. The volume was too much. It was spread around. There was one famous case of one particular contract, a put option contract, that was $2.5 million unclaimed profits that the San Francisco Chronicle And I was just told by a friend of mine that he had contacted the author of that Chronicle piece, and he was subsequently, not canned, but he was moved to Sacramento or something. He was significantly demoted and not happy about it. But, yeah, so that was one single case. But Phil Erlanger, who's probably the country's top expert on short selling, put options and that sort of thing, you know, derivatives market, you know, he put out a newsletter to his clientele after 9/11. He was amongst the first to sort of blow the whistle to notice this activity, this anomalous activity. He estimated that the profits was in the billions, and it was spread across a number of stocks that he looked at, United, American, Marriott, Starwood. Those are hotel stocks, the first two being the two airliners, of course, that were hijacked.
Right.
Did not see similar activity in Delta, which is a significant point. But there were 38 stocks that were tagged or ID'd, identified by the SEC. They put out word to the brokers across the country to, you know, help them request support in identifying who the traders were, the speculators were. And but there was no final report. There was no formal report either from the FBI or the SEC. But basically you saw massive spikes, very high put call ratios, meaning a lot more puts as bets the stock will come down than calls betting a stock will go up. And you saw the highest ones with United. The multiple over the daily average volume, as reported in Bloomberg and other places, was 285 times with United. There was also a similar spike with Merrill Lynch. Merrill Lynch had offices in the towers. So it looks like, you know, you could make the case, you could argue, and certainly argue for further investigation and clarification. He just a very poignant point he made to me today, that the commission basically swept all of this aside by saying that there was a newsletter put out by somebody that basically suggested that people, you know, go short on or place put options on the airlines. You know, he was betting that the airline industry was going to go down. But there was no newsletter that could move this, could precipitate this kind of a move. Mm-hmm. He is the leader in this niche of you know, advising these sort of speculators, these types of investments. And he said there's just no way that a newsletter could account for the spikes that he documented. He told me he called the FBI right after 9/11. They never called him back. This is the country's top expert. Mm-hmm. So what does this tell you about the seriousness about getting to the bottom of this?
Right. And that's just one thread that could help us, possibly, we don't know, but it could unravel some of the secrecy behind who may have supported the efforts of the hijackers, who may have funded them. And, you know, we have these different threads, such as, for example, the money that came in from Pakistan via its security agency, the ISI, just days before September 11th of 2001.
Yeah.
And again, you know, I take some pains, Kyle, not to go off the deep end in conspiracy theory land. But as David Ray Griffin has properly told us, the government fed us a conspiracy theory. And it's our job now to try to find out how much, if any, of that is true. And much of it does not withstand ordinary scrutiny. And as Griffin wrote in Debunking 9/11 Debunking, the work of the 9/11 Zelikow Commission was full of holes and full of a lack of depth and you know, failure to even ask the right questions of the right people.
Yeah.
And I know that you and the Jersey Girls were there monitoring the hearings and wanted to just shout out questions on a regular basis, but of course that wouldn't have been polite.
Well, we tried to corner them in the hallways afterwards or beforehand, and I did get some interesting quotes and some looks from some of them, you know, when I would get them and pose a question to them. And it was nice to make them at least squirm a little and feel comfortable.
Now, Kyle, one of the other money trails has to do with checks that we believe were written by the wife of Prince Bandar of Saudi Arabia that were sent to San Diego. And it's not entirely clear to me, were Al-Hazmi and Al-Madar, these two individuals who ended up as hijackers, and they were in San Diego at the time, have we gotten any further in figuring out where they got their money and the extent to which the royal family sent them cash.
You know, that's one trail I haven't followed any further. It's to me where all the money came from that funded their activity. But that certainly is a curious piece, as you know, just as is the story of how the Saudis, many of them, were flown out immediately after 9/11.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you to amplify on this. You sent an email to the media, including me, and you wrote that you know, you have many questions about the CIA Inspector General's report. It appears that Al-Hazmi and Al-Midhar were being protected by higher-ups in the CIA. Respected author Joe Trento has reported they were working for Saudi intelligence. Others reported the two were removed from the watch list days before 9/11. I don't know if either was the case. It is clear, however, that there was a concerted effort to protect them, similar in some respects to the way authorities at FBI headquarters refused to allow Colleen Rowley in Minnesota to go into Massawi's laptop computer, or how higher-ups prevented Robert Wright in Chicago from going after the money trail of Yassin Al-Qadi, who financed the software company P-TECH, I've heard about that, and the terrorist group Hamas, and was later named a specially designated global terrorist by President Bush in October of 2001. So tell us a little more about what you're talking about here.
Well, you know, the important point here is that there's a pattern, and it's a pattern of obstruction or spiked investigations or buried leads, and it's a pattern that extends across, well, virtually name any agency to conduct an investigation, and you're going to find examples of this, anecdotal and otherwise. And here, it's a little more than anecdotal. It's fairly well documented. Colleen Rowley was a field agent, I think, in the legal department in the Minnesota field office that was involved in putting together a FISA request to get into Massawi's computer. He was in their custody. One of his teachers at this flight school said that, you know, this guy could take a plane and fly it into the towers. That's literally what he told authorities. And yet, and then there was some concern about, you know, protecting his rights. They had to be sure that he was, in fact, a terrorist or find some evidence to that effect. So they contacted French intelligence where he had flown from. And indeed, the French corroborated or passed on their intel that he was somehow affiliated with a terrorist group or overseas. And yet the FBI headquarters spiked that FISA request. I think they compromised it. They changed it in such a way that it was rejected. This is very rare. It almost never happened in the years prior to 9/11. Mm-hmm. So not only did the CIA not pass along their intelligence to the FBI about Al-Hazmi and Al-Midhar when they knew they were coming into the U.S., but a FBI detailee, according to Michael Isikoff, one of the lead investigators at Newsweek, told us in an interview that I did for our documentary that didn't end up in the final cut, that an FBI detailee had formulated a cable about Al-Hazmi and Al-Midhar and had made the motions to send that cable to his superiors at the FBI, but CIA superiors, CIA officials, spiked that cable, prevented that cable from being sent. And then Robert Rice is another case in point where he literally had to carry his computer home. They had, they have obstructed his efforts to get to the bottom of his investigation to try to get the evidence for an indictment. And so he followed the trails on his own in his own time and then ended up writing a book that was 95% done before 9/11 and ended up being 100% redacted after he blew the whistle and came before the American people and apologized to the 9/11 families for not being able to get to expose the plot, because he felt that he was on that trail. So you have a pattern of obstruction and spiked investigations. And the people that were in FBI headquarters, and certainly the people at the CIA, have never been really called to task. The individuals, Spike Bowman and Michael and David Frasca, have never been brought before either the proper committee or the 9/11 commission and asked point blank about these cases by people who know them, who know the details. It's never happened. And so I was trying to make the point that this is part of a larger pattern. And, of course, as I referred to earlier, Kristen Breitweiser said that she felt this was purposeful.
Yeah.
Purposeful.
We need to take a break. We'll return with Kyle Hintz. We'll go to the phones in the next segment, too, and we'll get his comments on Michael Chertoff, a potential nominee for Attorney General to replace Alberto Gonzalez. 888-5-PETER-B is our toll-free number. This is the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, this is Stephanie Miller. You're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself. concept. AM 540 KRXA.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans. One is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
10,000 people in the last four decades achieved their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Sober Stones, do you have yours yet? Big Sur Jade is now available for you. This rare, beautiful, deep green jade is found in a tiny cove south of Big Sur, used by Native Americans in healing for hundreds of years. Keep one in your pocket to remind you of your commitment to living life present and sober. Go to SoberStones.com, SoberStones.com for your beautiful pocket jade. Touch it, feel it every day. Look at it. Sober Stones.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Kyle Hintz is with us, producer of the documentary 9/11 Press for Truth. Go to the website 911pressfortruth.com, and you can get full information. Still downloads available there, Kyle?
Yeah, we don't have the full film there, but there's a link to Brave New Theater. Excuse me, bravenewtheaters.com. We're doing a week of screenings across the country. From the September 7th through the 16th, called Answers for 9/11 for the 9/11 Families Week. And you can sign up at Brave New Theaters. That's Robert Greenwald's site that he set up so that independent filmmakers can promote their films and bypass the normal distribution channels and get it out to Americans across the country. You can sign up to host a screening at a library, make arrangements, or do it in your own home. Other people can come and find out if there's someone in their area screening a given film. We were actually the first film to use Brave New Theaters when we launched our film, and we released our film last year in August.
Great. And I've got a couple of callers. We'll get to you in a minute, so hold on the line there. But, Kyle, I wanted to get your comments on Michael Chertoff. He was an official in the Justice Department and then was made the head of Homeland Security. And now he is rumored to be a contender for the replacement for Alberto Gonzalez. And why don't you tick off three or four reasons why you think that wouldn't be such a great idea?
Yeah, there's a couple of red flags that that I've identified over the past couple of years when it comes to Michael Chertoff. Most of it's the result of the work done by Alan Duncan. He was a former police officer. cops are sort of part of a SWAT team, I believe, a special team in New Jersey, who retired and then became quite close to many of the 9/11 family members and did some counseling there. He's also a filmmaker involved in some film work. But Alan did some research in Jersey and pertaining to Chertoff before he became Homeland Security Director. And it's a case that goes back to some money that went missing from an HMO controlled by a man named Dr. Magdi Elamir. And there was $5.7 million that went missing to unknown parties through wire transfers to bank accounts that were never identified. He actually represented Magdi Elamir. He worked for a law firm that represented Magdi Elamir. I think he actually represented him. This was part of a sting operation. It's a rather complex story, but there was an Operation Diamondback. This was a sting, and one of the fellows who was eventually charged in the sting where there was trafficking in weapons, and it was tied back to the ISI and was his brother, Mohammed Elamir. And Dateline did a piece about all of this. And the point being is that Chertoff was in a position to know about this, and basically no charges were ever filed against Magdi Elamir. And, you know, here's an HMO, there's missing money, and his brother is involved, you know, with the trafficking of weapons in connection with the ISI. Mm-hmm. And he was in a position when he became the head of the criminal division to file charges. By the time charges were brought down, he was the head of the criminal division and would have been quite familiar with that case. So this raises a big red flag with me.
Very interesting. And also, there's that little thing called Katrina that occurred on Michael Chertoff's watch, and probably that would come up at any confirmation hearings.
No doubt. I'd encourage folks to go to the University Star magazine. This is out of Texas State University. Sandra Hicks did a great article about this and probably will do a better job at sort of summarizing the case.
Mm-hmm.
The title of the article is Security Risk? By Melissa Johnson and Sandra Hicks at the University Star.
All right.
Check that out, folks.
Very good. Don in Hollister, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking the call. I appreciate this. What people need to realize is the Iraq War wouldn't be around if we didn't have the 9/11. And my question to you, from what I understand, Dick Cheney was given in charge of NORAD in June of 2001. And from what I understand, if you control NORAD, you control the skies.
I think that what happened there, Don, is the control was transferred to Donald Rumsfeld, the Secretary of Defense, not to the Vice President. Am I right, Kyle?
Well, yeah, let me jump in there. There was a change in the protocol.
Right.
But ended up being kind of a moot point. But rather than getting into the whole NORAD question, relative to Cheney, from what I understand, there was an executive order signed by the president that put the vice president in charge of all preparations at a national level for any attacks, any chem, bio, or nuke attacks, chemical attacks, biological materials, or nuclear attacks. So he would have been at the top of the chain. You know, he would have been liaising with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs and the Joint Chiefs and all the branches of government and intelligence agency, presumably, as well. So that would have put him basically in a position of being able to put his finger on the pulse of all the things that were going on and overseeing them, all the war games that were planned for that day, both Vigilant Guardian and all of these war games, as well as Tripod 2, which was an exercise that was due to start on September 12th, using the very same facility, the Tripod 2, which was a chem bio nuke attack scenario in New York City. They ended up using the very same facility that Tripod 2 was going to use for the response and the, you know, emergency response and treatment of the injured and so on after 9/11.
I got to stop us there. Don, thanks for your call. And Kyle Hentz, thank you for your work. Don't stop.
I won't. And thank you, Peter.
All right.
For having me on.
We'll talk again soon. Kyle Hentz, one of the producers of 9/11 Press for Truth. Coming up next, we open up the phones to talk with you in the Free Speech Zone. Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. When will the course in Iraq change? President Bush making a surprise visit to the troops there today.
Those decisions will be based on a calm assessment by our military commanders on the conditions on the ground, not a nervous reaction by Washington politicians to poll results in the media.
On the ground, Marine Captain Lee Hemming telling President Bush how troops feel about longer deployment and shorter turnaround.
Stress on the families. Year after year of only being home for 5 months, it's become a little harder each time.
CBS's Katie Couric gaining an exclusive interview with the president during his visit.
Is this, hopefully, in your view, placate critics of the war on Capitol Hill?
You know, I don't know, Katie. That's a good question. I would certainly hope so. In other words, if we're able to redeploy at some point in time, I would hope so, because the stakes are very high. I mean, failure in Iraq would be a disaster for the United States.
Analysis from CBS News military expert Mike Lyons.
I think you're seeing the military saying to the president, we've really done all we can here, given the resources we have, given the tempo that we're running at. So if this is all we can do, we've got to have help from some other aspects of our government, and there's got to be help from the Iraqi government itself if we're going to see further on results down the road.
Air Force One is now in the air for the lengthy flight to Sydney, Australia. Also headed there, CBS's Peter Mayer.
President Bush will travel a long way for a short visit. Following his surprise trip to Iraq, he planned side meetings with the leaders of Australia, China, and Japan in Sydney before the weekend Asia-Pacific Economic Summit. But he'll leave Sydney before the summit even ends, so he can be back in the U.S. for next week's release of the Iraq War Status Report. He has already set the stage for that with his surprise visit to Iraq. Peter Mayer, CBS News, Honolulu.
Trying to get ahead of the 145-mile-an-hour winds of Hurricane Felix. They are leaving in droves from the Honduran island resort of Roatan. Planes are coming and going at a furious rate, airlifting tourists out a few hundred at a time. The status of mental health today, very unhealthy.
14% of the world's disease burden is due to mental disorders, and almost a third of countries have no specific budget for mental health. These sobering warnings in a special issue of the medical journal, The Lancet.
The fatality rate among homeless mentally ill in the third world is very high.
Dr. Pascal James Imperato of New York's Downstate Medical Center saw that firsthand in Africa.
They're often kept in cages and then eventually just released without any treatment whatsoever, and they became very vulnerable to a variety of infectious diseases.
Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Ah, what a perfect day for a Labor Day parade. Yeah, it being Labor Day and all. This parade in Pittsburgh. Labor in America honored in big cities and small towns across the country today. Not all fun and games, though. A pit bull escaping its handler during a Labor Day parade in Des Moines, injuring three, sending two to a hospital. The dog's owner and his 18-year-old niece. This is CBS News.
What if you could buy peace of mind? Well, you can with Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles. Everyone must pass a 115-point inspection, and it's all backed by our 6-year, 75,000-mile warranty coverage. That's peace of mind. Now get 3.9% APR on select Ford or Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles. That's just 3.9%. Not all buyers qualify for Ford credit financing. Offer ends 9/30/07. See dealer for limited warranty details or visit FordCPO.com.
What are you really getting in most burger joints? Could it be a bigger waistline and a lack of energy, too? Instead of greasy fast food, how about great flavor without the flab and fat? Try the new Subway Fresh Fit meal that fits into the American Heart Association's approach to a healthy lifestyle. Now with more tasty choices like new hearty wheat bread that's a good source of fiber and Dannon low-fat yogurt. The new Subway Fresh Fit meal. Subway. Eat fresh.
Subway Fresh Fit meals are not a diet program.
Like a shooting star, they burn bright, then burn out.
When the music's over.
Jim Morrison, just one of music's stars to die young. A survey of 100 stars in the top 1,000 albums who died between 1965 and 2005 found drugs or booze caused more than 25% of the deaths. The survey, published in the British Medical Journal, found that pop and rock stars are more than twice as likely as the rest of the population to die from an early death. Larry Miller, CBS News, London.
Lance Armstrong has always seemed big-hearted somehow. New research does suggest that pedaling in the Tour de France gives competitors bigger hearts, or maybe it requires those hearts to start with. The study's author says virtually all of those who compete in that race have enlarged hearts, 40% bigger than average. Athlete's heart is attributed largely to rigorous training, but researchers still aren't sure if they're just larger to start with. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
What if you could buy peace of mind? Well, you can with Ford Lincoln and Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles. Everyone must pass a 115-point inspection, and it's all backed by our 6-year, 75,000-mile warranty coverage. That's peace of mind. Now get 3.9% APR on select Ford or Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles. That's just 3.9%. Not all buyers qualify for Ford credit financing. Offer ends 9/30/07. See dealer for limited warranty details or visit FordCPO.com.
Can you guess which state Michelin Man is in? Having left Utah, he's on the aptly named Loneliest Road. He'll drive vast distances without anything in sight, including a gas pump. That's why he has Michelin Hydro-Edge tires. As the longest-lasting, most fuel-efficient tires in their category, they're just right for lonely roads and high gas prices. For more on Hydro-Edge tires and to see which state Michelin Man is in, visit michelinman.com/guesswhere.
Michelin, a better way forward.
Category defined as premium-priced S&T passenger products.
Peter B. Collins!
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to another edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B. Thanks for joining us today. We've got a lot to talk about. Some good things happened during the administration of President Bill Clinton in the 1990s. But one enduring failure that was tragically locked in as policy was a half-baked idea called Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And let me cut right through it. I think that gays and lesbians should be permitted to serve openly in our military service. But rampant homophobia prevents even today a rational conversation about this issue. We won't let it stop us, though. If you'd like to join us for this conversation, lines are open at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You can always email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. In about a half an hour, Robert Greenwald, the filmmaker who brought us Out Foxed and many other fine documentaries over the past few years, will join us to talk about a short film that he produced and is available right now at YouTube and also on the website lifttheban.org, and it profiles an individual service member who ran afoul of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. That's Stephen Benjamin. Joining us to talk about this issue are two men who know about it firsthand. And joining us first is Army Sergeant Blue Copas, who has a very interesting story to tell. Blue, I'm Peter. Thanks for joining us today.
Sure, thanks.
It's my pleasure. And also with us is former Navy Petty Officer Jason Knight. Jason, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Let me turn first to Blue. And Blue, we're on the air on many radio stations, including KRXA, which serves the Monterey area. And I know that you attended the Defense Language Institute there. And are you still in the area?
I have left the area. I'm back in Northeast Tennessee, but I did complete the Defense Language Institute in Monterey back in 2002-3 and early 2004.
Mm-hmm. And Jason Knight, you also have language skills, is that correct?
Yes, I also was at DLI.
Mm-hmm. And what we know is that of the 11,000 service members who have been dismissed under this half-baked policy of don't ask, don't tell, there were 726 last year alone, that a large number include people like you with specialized skills that are in great demand and short supply for the continuing occupation of Iraq. And Blue Copas, talk a little bit about how much was invested in training you in Arabic and possibly other languages, and just what kind of a waste it is to deny your service.
Well, first of all, I mean, the process is very selective to go through testing to even see if one is has the ability to learn the language. And then after, for myself, it was about a year and a half of the actual language. That's the longest that it takes for Arabic. And then a few more months for on-the-job training. So 2 years of that kind of training where there is a very high attrition rate. And people continue to be refreshed back into earlier units to try to catch them up because it's so demanding. And then all the while, a security interview or a security clearance is being sought, which for me took about 2 years to complete.
Mm-hmm.
It's no easy cookie. It's a lot of work to get somebody through the training. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. All through college, I guess I would say it was. Things came pretty easy, but when I got there, it was a crash course in learning how to study.
Mm-hmm.
And to pick up a language that I had no prior knowledge of.
Now, Blue Copas, explain, you were openly gay before you joined the military, and you certainly knew about this ridiculous policy. How did you deal with that, and what was your thinking as you joined, knowing that potentially you could be outed at some point that might be highly inconvenient for you?
Well, I knew the policy. I knew quite a bit about how it worked and what my end of the bargain would be, and I knew it would be a big compromise. It was giving up a bit of freedom that I had begun to find in life. But at the time, there was a higher need, I felt, to serve the country. While I had the ability, I thought I would take the opportunity at least for a few years just to put a bit of service towards my country.
Mm-hmm. And so were there points where you felt you were about to be outed, but it didn't happen? And did you go through a kind of stressful period there where you were worried about it?
Well, I would say for the first probably about 3 years, I never had a problem. Many of my fellow soldiers knew, had figured it out, but no one ever cared. I never felt I was in a hostile environment. I guess the social climate has changed a lot, especially since the inception of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. Unfortunately, towards the end, there was a campaign that some anonymous informant took out to get me out of the military. And at that point, it was pretty stressful. It was not something I'd want to go through again. And we all know the outcome now.
Yeah. Jason Knight is with us as well, who served in the United States Navy, rising to the rank of Petty Officer Second Class. And Jason is a Hebrew linguist. Tell us your side of this story, Jason. How did you deal with it as you were entering the military? And did people guess your sexual orientation? And did that put you at some sort of risk of disclosure?
Well, my situation is kind of different. I grew up in a very religious home, so when I joined the military, you know, I was not out, and it wasn't actually until I got married that I realized that I was just, you know, doing the right thing to do, I guess,
mm-hmm.
The social pressures, and I wound up getting married, and it was the wrong thing to do.
And excuse me, but just to be clear, you married a woman?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I did.
Uh-huh.
I guess I figured, you know, if I had done it, then, you know, it was a phase, like my mom said, and it would go away. But, you know, that's not the case. I dealt with that, and I was actually already about 2.5 years in the Navy while that happened. And we got annulled. Actually, we started the paperwork the next day. And I had to turn in the annulment paperwork to change my status from married to single. And that's when I came out to my command. You know, I figured I would do the honorable thing and tell the truth. You know, because I believed in the Navy's core values of honor, courage, and commitment, and, you know, I valued my integrity. And I really didn't understand about the policy about, you know, don't ask, don't tell. I had heard about it, but I wasn't really aware of it. I was very naive then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I guess my beliefs in the core values had really, you know, pushed me to, you know, tell my command, and I did. And, they processed me out, and, I guess my paperwork had never gotten to my record, and I got recalled, and I actually spent another year in Kuwait.
They let you exit the service, but they didn't tag you as gay, and therefore you were in the IRR, the Ready Reserve?
Well, no, they had actually, they did all the don't ask, don't tell paperwork, but for some reason it never made it into my record.
Mm-hmm.
I guess because I was coming up on my four-year mark, and it was just easier to just process me out or whatnot, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, for some reason, they recalled me again, and I served a year in Kuwait, and I actually just got finished last month. And, you know, I was not going to go back in the closet. You know, I had already been discharged once, and it was something that, you know, was part of who I am. And, not, you know, I don't define myself by it, but, you know, I enjoy serving my country. I enjoy being in the Navy. So I went, and I served a year, and my coworkers were all well aware, and they were very supportive, and it wasn't until my story broke in the newspaper that they decided to discharge me the second time.
Mm-hmm. Now, Blue, I can still hear the voice of Strom Thurmond in the Senate debate about gays serving in the military, and we need to point out that it was a Democrat, Sam Nunn from Georgia, who basically marched over to the White House and told Bill Clinton, who tried to make this one of his first moves when he was inaugurated, that it's not going to happen. And Strom Thurmond, he just kept going on and on about unit cohesion. We have homosexuals in there, and we aren't going to have unit cohesion. And I just find it ridiculous that he would have made that claim. And I just want to ask you from your personal experience, did you ever have problems with your colleagues, and did your sexuality somehow affect unit cohesion?
Okay, actually, I have a good example to go against that. Often, many opponents of the of repealing the policy will say that because of the simple idea of showers, of service members showering together, would cause a huge problem. It's already happening, whether they would like to admit it or not, because gays and lesbians are allowed to serve in the military, so they are taking showers. But in my particular case, just a little story, while I was at DLI, I broke my leg in half, and my family was on this side of the country. So my fellow soldiers were basically my family. And that kind of happens in the military anyway,
mm-hmm.
To where you depend on them for other things. Well, it got to the point where it was me. The only way I could get in and out of the shower was with their help. And they knew about me. They didn't mm-hmm. have a problem with it. And it continued to work. The unit cohesion was not destroyed. In fact, I think it only brought us closer.
Yeah. Interesting. Jason, do you have a quick story about unit cohesion?
It just seems like, you know, it's so ridiculous because they said the same thing about, you know, when they allow blacks in the military and when they allow women in the military.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they harped on the same thing. I really don't think any of these people have ever been in the military themselves. You know, the fact that you might be gay, I mean, yeah, there are some people that might have grown up in very, you know, strict and, you know, biased backgrounds, you know, about, you know, this particular situation, but you know, it never really happened. You know, one of my friends that was actually quoted in my story, he had never really been around gay people, and he was very kind of off sandwich when he found out. And you know, he's one of my best friends now, and it was funny because he said, you know, I never expected you as being a gay person. I never expected this you know, because everybody has this misconception of what a gay person is. And he told me, he's like, you don't define yourself by being that, and you're Jason, and you just happen to be gay, and that's all right with me.
Cool. That's Jason Knight, Navy Petty Officer. Also with us is Army Sergeant Blue Copas. If you have a question or comment about lifting the ban, give us a call.
Which sounds a lot like blatant homophobia to me.
888-5 Peter B is our toll-free number. That's 888-573-8372.
Left and right. That's why we must unite. We gotta stand and fight.
Check out the website lifttheban.org, and it takes 2.5 minutes to watch the video. It's very powerful. We're going to play the audio track from the video coming up in about 10 minutes here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just 2 blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Carmel's community bookstore, The Pilgrim's Way, is a locally owned independent bookstore and has been for nearly 40 years.
Discover for yourself our intimate and unique setting, including the Secret Garden, known locally as a hidden treasure in downtown Carmel. Our friendly staff at Pilgrim's Way are available to assist you with any personal needs or gift buying. And our book selection offers the best of personal development, local interest, bestsellers, novels, children's, and metaphysical, plus much, much more. We have great music and healing tools, cards, and garden statuary.
Visit us at www.pilgrimsway.com or call 624-4955 or visit the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel's only bookstore, and the Secret Garden on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in Carmel.
I told our people, get information without torture, and was assured by our Justice Department that we were not torturing.
And you need to know they hate us because we love freedom.
Well, we've never been stay the course, George.
And I think it's important in a time of war that to the extent possible we leave politics out of the major decisions being made.
However, we will not go along with a partisan fishing expedition aimed at honorable public servants. I have proposed a reasonable way to avoid an impasse.
Said was the Czech intelligence service reported after 9/11 that Atta had been in Prague on April 9th of 2001, where he allegedly met with an Iraqi intelligence official. We have never been able to confirm that, nor have we been able to knock it down. It's been pretty well confirmed that he did go to Prague and he did meet with a senior official of the Iraqi intelligence service in Czechoslovakia last April.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues. Gays in the military? Same-sex marriage? Hey, come on, right-wingers. Get over it.
Every time we think about same-sex marriage, it makes us sick to our guts. I mean, two people who want to commit to a stable, monogamous, lifelong relationship, what are they, nuts? It's unnatural. Now, a man should not lie with a person who is a guy. He should only lie to his wife. The Bible is clear. We're defenders of marriage in three-button suits. We'll raise our double standard and see who salutes.
We're talking about the ridiculous don't ask, don't tell policy. It's unreasonable, irrational, and untenable in so many cases. And there's a powerful new mini film out, a short video that you can view at lifttheban.org, and the filmmaker Robert Greenwald will join us in about 10 minutes. We're talking now with two service members with language skills. An estimated 300 individuals have been forced out of the service because of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and these 300 estimated individuals have significant language skills. Blue Kopis, as we've mentioned, an Army sergeant who speaks Arabic. Jason Knight, a Navy petty officer who speaks Hebrew. And the estimated cost of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, in terms of discharging and replacing the individuals, approaches almost $400 million. Just ridiculous. And let's see, Mike from Santa Cruz joins us on the phone. Hello, Mike. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Well, I just want to let you know a little bit of my experience. I was in the Air Force in the mid-'80s. I think this was just before the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. When I did my 4 years in the Air Force and I got out, I wanted to go back in the military, and I thought I'd try out the Navy. And I was told that my reenlistment code was 2B, and the letter or the number 2 and the letter B. And I asked, what does that mean? And he said, well, I can't really tell you. And I asked him to come outside and tell me, and he said, well, it's because you're gay.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jason or Blue, are you familiar with a 2B, and how is that different from a DD-214? Let's go to Blue first.
Well, the 2B was part of a classification before the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy was put into place.
Okay.
Currently now, for instance, on my DD-214, which is a piece of paper that whenever I apply to a job from here on out, I have to show them, and it shows that I was chaptered out of the military for homosexual acts. So I'm automatically outed to any employer.
Wow, that's the equivalent of a sex offender registry.
Yeah, basically.
Wow, that's unconstitutional. Jason, do you want to add something here?
Just to add on that, it's just an old classification, I think. Now mine says HRB, and it says, because of homosexual statement.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in the same boat where, any job that I apply to, anybody that asks for my DD-214, which is a discharge paper, automatically knows exactly what happened. So.
Wow, I wasn't aware of that. That's a lingering black mark that, I think this is unconstitutional. Mike, anything you want to add?
No, that's all. Thanks,
all right.
Peter,
thanks.
All you do.
Thanks for your call. I appreciate that. Now, gentlemen, I just want to ask if you have ever observed heterosexual activity in the military, because earlier this year, I think it was General Pace, who went public and said, that he can't abide by changes in Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And he also just kind of volunteered that, sexual activity among men and women is illegal in the military. But I don't imagine that anybody gets drummed out and has to carry a piece of paper for the rest of their lives that says that heterosexual activity caused their departure from the military. Jason, you first.
Well, I remember when, my second deployment, when I went to Kuwait, the first weekend we were there, there was two sexual assaults right there on the base. From a male to a female.
Mm-hmm.
So it happens a lot. But you don't see them being, discharged because of that.
Yeah. And Blue?
Well, I just laugh about it. Just wondering how quickly I might, if I brought my date to the military ball and danced with them, how quickly I might be out. But obviously it's completely accepted and sanctioned. I mean, for a unit organization sanctioned
military ball where people come with their dates and are able to dance and to make out on the dance floor, but it would never fly for me.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, thank you for your service. Thank you for speaking up and speaking out. And I want everybody to visit the website, liftheban.org. I hope we succeed in doing that in the near future.
It's my pleasure. Thank
All right. Blue, Jason, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Filmmaker Robert Greenwald joins us next to talk more about lifting the ban here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Beyond Wheat Artisan Bakery, right here in Monterey, brings you sugar-free and gluten-free muffins and cakes that are all natural, with organic ingredients, and loaded with super grain nutrition. Find Beyond Wheat at Cornucopia Natural Foods Carmel, Carmel Valley Market, and Staff of Life and New Leaf Markets in Santa Cruz. Be sure to try Beyond Wheat for a truly special treat, created to keep you happy and totally guilt-free. You'll be so glad you did.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention, whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance. Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
"We're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service."
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
I told our people, get information without torture, and was assured by our Justice Department that we were not torturing.
And you need to know, they hate us because we love freedom.
Well, we've never been state, of course, George.
And I think it's important in a time of war that to the extent possible we leave politics out of the major decisions being made.
However, we will not go along with a partisan fishing expedition aimed at honorable public servants. I proposed a reasonable way to avoid an impasse.
Said was the Czech intelligence service reported after 9/11 that Atta had been in Prague on April 9th of 2001, where he allegedly met with an Iraqi intelligence official. We have never been able to confirm that, nor have we been able to knock it down.
It's been pretty well confirmed that he did go to Prague and he did meet with a senior official of the Iraqi intelligence service in Czechoslovakia last April.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Let's throw in a dollop of tolerance and just a skosh of a desire for change. What do you say? Put that in your values folder today. We continue our conversation about lifting the ban on gays in the military. Visit the website lifttheban.org to see the video that we're going to play the audio from in just a second. And if you have a question or comment, filmmaker Robert Greenwald joins us for the rest of the hour. Call us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And Robert Greenwald is a very busy documentarian. He took time out to join us today. Thank you, Robert. Good to talk with you again.
My pleasure.
And we got to visit a little bit last week at the Take Back America conference in Washington, where you debuted, or at least launched, the viral video that people can see at lifttheban.org. Talk a little bit about the backstory here, Robert. How did this develop?
Well, the backstory of the backstory is that Brave New Films, which has done a series of documentaries. We did Walmart, and we did Iraq for Sale, and we did Outfox, mm-hmm. which you and I have discussed on the air. We decided in 2007 that we wanted to focus on the short, viral video campaigns because there's an amazing opportunity for progressives to use this new technology and to use this distribution system that, after all, Google paid $1.5 billion for and mm-hmm. is now available to us for free. So this year we've been focusing on short viral pieces, and we've had really stunning success. We've had some videos that we put together that were at the center of the campaign against Fox News to stop the Democrats from shooting themselves in the foot and ending the Nevada Democrat-sponsored Fox debate. We've done various ones on the war. We've done some on Mother's Day. We've some done on Father's Day.
Don't forget Gonzalez.
Exactly. One of our favorites, Impeach Gonzalez, where we had we've had over 200,000 views now and 78,000 people signing a petition. So the backstory is we've got this wonderful opportunity. We've now over 2 million people have seen these shorts on different subjects, and we wanted and did, as you mentioned, one about the ban on gays in the military, and found this incredible young man who's trained his whole life to be a Arabic translator, totally fluent. He goes into the army. They snoop on his private emails to his roommate, and they throw him out. And in the video, he talks about the fact that it's truly heartbreaking. He says he watches the news now, and he sees that there's an attack. And he says, I wonder if I'd been allowed to do my job, would I have been able to save American and Iraqi lives?
Yeah. I mean, in the news just today, a group of Sunnis who are viewed as sympathizers because they've been collaborating with the United States to try to pacify al-Anbar province were killed.
Mm-hmm.
And what we don't know is, you know, how they were identified and how they might have been protected by American or other forces, including Iraqi forces, if we were fluent in the language and were able to understand the cultural cues that would differentiate a Sunni who's a Ba'athist from a Sunni who is, you know, aligned with al-Qaeda from a Shiite who, you know, I mean, it's a very complicated picture there. And our forces are overwhelmed and under-equipped.
Exactly. There have been over 11,000 gay and lesbian men and women who've been thrown out of the military, several hundred of them fluent in Arabic. And it's such an indictment on a sort of basic moral level that it really makes my blood boil and my colleagues at Brave New Films. And that's what got us to do the campaign. And if you go to lifttheban.org, you can see the video, you can find background, and most importantly, you can sign the petition that will be going to different members of Congress so that we can increase the number of members who've signed legislation to essentially throw out this idiocy of don't ask, don't tell, and have a policy much like the rest of the world, where it's like 40, 50 countries where gay and lesbian men and women serve right alongside others, and there is no problem other than the problem of they are now, their lives are in danger equally because mm-hmm. they're in the military.
Yeah, Robert Greenwald is with us from Brave New Films. Visit the website bravenewfilms.org, and you can see many of these video shorts that are very powerful. And we like to break the rules here on radio. They tell us we can't show videos on the radio, and I say, let's listen to a clip here from the film that you can see at lifttheban.org.
My grandfather had been in the Navy, and so had my great-grandfather, so there's sort of a family tradition there. The military seemed like a really good option. I get to go to school, learn a language. I left for Monterey, California, where I attended DLI, Defense Language Institute. It was 8 hours a day, every day of the week, learning Arabic for 63 weeks straight. The last half of the course, you're learning 100 words or more every day. Not everyone makes it through the language training, and then even those who do are not necessarily top performers who can process difficult language. I graduated in March 2005. I scored the highest scores you can get on the military's language exam. I'm here, I'm willing to serve, I'm trained, I know how to fight, I speak Arabic. I'm probably, you know, a recruiter's dream.
There's a dangerous shortage of Arabic speakers in uniform on the ground in Iraq and in military intelligence.
That's a clip from CNN.
Speakers in the U.S. Embassy in Iraq, of 1,000 employees,
the U.S. is desperately short of foreign language speakers, even though the problem has been widely reported since the 9/11 attack.
There are many times that the breakdown in communication can cause a serious problem.
Ana, Stephen Benjamin, another, and Sofa. I, Stephen Benjamin, do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution. Kharijiya wa dakhliya. And I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, and I obey the orders of the President of the United States. I do know the work I made a difference, a huge difference in the lives of the soldiers who were deployed. I consider it probably one of the most important things I've done in my life. The details are classified, of course, but it was pretty much frontline support to the troops. I see the news now, and it's like every day you see an attack, hundreds of them all across Iraq, and I ask myself a question. Was there intelligence that could have prevented that? Would I have been the one that would have picked that up? And I hope to God that that's not the case. I'm trained to fight. I speak Arabic. I'm willing to serve, but they won't let me because I'm gay.
Stephen Benjamin. And you can see the film. It's only another 30 seconds longer, 2.5 minutes. Lifttheban.org is the website where you can view it. And Robert Greenwald, I can remember a few years back working at a radio station where they pulled me aside and they said, you know, Peter, less is more. And I'm a loudmouth, a guy who likes to talk, and I bristled at that, but I actually learned to edit and, you know, kind of become more concise. And I'm wondering, as a long-form documentarian who has done powerful pieces that run an hour or 90 minutes, is it challenging for you to try to compress it all into a short form, 2 or 3 minutes?
Very challenging, as I laughingly say, I've gone from 2 hours to 2 minutes, and where I used to say, oh, if only I could cut this 10, 15 minutes out, now I'm saying, oh, I've got to cut another 5 seconds. But the tradition with short-form video that has gotten passed around has generally been it's a joke or a gotcha. Our task, our challenge at Brave New Films and Brave New Foundation is, can we create political videos that people will pass around, things of substance? Sometimes there's humor in them, sometimes there isn't, sometimes there's music. We did one on Mission Accomplished, which we had a wonderful spoken word artist. But it's definitely finding a ways to tell a story, both in short form, and then, maybe most critically, getting people to watch it, pass it around, and take an action. Because the way we measure our success is number of people who see them, which we're doing wonderfully on, and then getting people to make a phone call, sign a petition, get involved, activate them because of what they've seen in the short-form video. And it's a very exciting challenge, and it's an opportunity that we've never had before, because as you well know, for years and years, distribution was completely controlled by the gatekeepers,
mm-hmm.
and now we've got this extraordinary chance that well, we can make use of the opportunities as long as we can create interesting content and find ways to reach people.
Yeah, Robert Greenwald's with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Julianne joins us from Santa Fe. Hello, Julianne.
Hi, Peter B. I was an intelligence officer and an interrogator in the Army in the 80s. And when I was at DLI, the Defense Language Institute there, I studied Russian.
Uh-huh.
And
Paruski.
Yes.
That's
and,
the only word.
It was the Cold War still then.
That's the only word I know besides da.
So at that time, just this is just my experience, it seemed like the Navy and the Air Force were more aggressive at out processing gay and lesbians than the Army was at that time. It seemed the Army was more tolerant, but I think that's totally changed now.
Well, Robert, do you have an impression?
I don't know the factual information. I have heard from gay and lesbian men and women who have been in the forces that it tends to vary depending on who the supervising officer is.
Right.
Because often the supervising officer and the colleagues will be totally aware and have no problem.
That was my experience,
because
I was a captain, and I didn't care as long as you did the job. And my husband was a captain in field artillery, and he, well, not so much. There are far more gay men than in intelligence than there are in field artillery. But that was his experience, too. He didn't care either, as long as you could do the job. But it really did depend. But I think it's totally changed. The more secular, the more tolerant officers have left the military in disgust.
Well, and Julianne, as we've covered on this program recently, there has been a resurgence of evangelical Christians.
I'm an atheist, and I didn't find it a problem when I was in. And
wow.
But now I don't think I could survive.
We've got the Air Force Academy, a recent episode at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, and apparently it's much more widespread than that. And so we have these amazing forces at work. Just taking the Air Force Academy, Colorado Springs was a hotbed of sexual harassment and sexual assault against women cadets in the 80s and early 90s, and now it seems to have come full circle. And the problems there, as Mikey Weinstein has pointed out, he has a son there who has been hazed for not embracing the Christian religion. He's Jewish.
Yeah, that's true. I found that in the Air Force and in the Marines that Christianity was, you know, more upfront than in the Army at that time. Now that we used to think the evangelicals were a fringe group in the Army, and we had no problem. My husband and I are both atheists too, so it just totally changed. I don't think we recognize the Army at this time, but I'm really interested in seeing lifttheban.org, and I will sign any petition.
Well, thank you.
Great, and it only takes 2.5 minutes. That's what is really nice for limited attention spans or just people with very busy schedules.
Oh, and then you can do something and pass it on to 10 of your friends, which is how we've seen these things grow and grow over the short period of time.
There's a very, very big veterans community here in Santa Fe of people who were in the military and who moved here after they retired or to work, and so I'll pass that along.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Julianne, thanks for calling in from New Mexico today. I really appreciate that, and next time you're dining, have a sopapilla for me, and that's what I love in that area. We're going to take a break and return with Robert Greenwald, the filmmaker, and I want Robert to tell us the story that he alluded to a little earlier about how disparate groups organized and defeated the Fox News Channel. We'll tell you that story coming up in a moment. Your calls and comments are welcome here about lifting the ban. Go to lifttheban.org. Our number toll-free is 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And I remain your humble host, Peter B. Collins.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. In New Orleans on Friday, the National Guard and a SWAT team were called after a group of public housing residents took over the Housing and Urban Development Office. Doug Cunningham reports.
Fed up with a lack of affordable housing in New Orleans 2 years after Katrina, a group of public housing residents from around the country occupied the New Orleans Housing and Urban Development Office, demanding to meet with housing officials on Friday. Ebony Stevenson with Chicago's South Side Together Organizing for Power was one of the people who occupied the office.
Residents from public housing, and stuff that I was housing across the country came together, and we took over the Housing Authority of New Orleans. From now on, they need to be put on notice that the people of New Orleans and public and subsidized residents from across the nation aren't going to take this anymore. People are tired of being displaced and feeling like that their own government is against us.
After a tense 3.5-hour standoff surrounded by National Guard troops, state police, and a SWAT unit, the protesters felt they had made their point, and they left the offices. 2 years after Katrina, there's a housing crisis in New Orleans, and the numbers of homeless there have sharply increased. The government has failed to reopen thousands of public housing units in New Orleans.
A unified front of labor, environmental, and consumer groups was no match for plans to allow Mexican trucks on U.S. highways. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco denied an emergency petition by the Teamsters, Sierra Club, and Public Citizen, seeking to block the move. Mexican trucks could start rolling across the border as early as the middle of next week. The provision was originally part of the North American Free Trade Agreement, but the Clinton administration refused to let that part of NAFTA move forward. The Bush administration chose to comply. In a statement, Teamsters President Jim Hoffa said he believes the move is a violation of the law, and that the Teamsters will continue moving forward with a federal lawsuit. As part of the plan, the Mexican government must allow U.S. trucks access to that country's roads. It appears it was a busy week for San Francisco courts and labor, as the U.S. District Court blocked a U.S. plan to begin cracking down on employers who use undocumented workers. The Social Security Administration is preparing to send letters to employers who have 10 or more employees with names that do not match Social Security numbers, and the Department of Homeland Security then would fine those companies if they ignored the warning letters. The ACLU and AFL-CIO brought the lawsuit, arguing that the Social Security database is full of errors and that the letters could lead to employers discriminating against some employees. Which state has the highest number of organized workers according to new numbers from the U.S. Census Bureau? That would be Hawaii, with 25% of workers represented by a labor union. New York was second, with 24% of workers organized.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 9 minutes away from the hour. We're talking about lifting the stupid ban on gays in the military. It's way past due time. And you may know that I think virtually all of the Democratic candidates for president support lifting the ban. Interesting that Hillary Clinton supports it. And I think virtually all the Republicans oppose it. The weakest response in one of these group settings called a debate was when Rudy Giuliani, who appears to be quite tolerant and spent some time after he was kicked out of Gracie Mansion living with a couple of gay friends, he said, oh, you wouldn't want to take on a tough issue like this during wartime, which is quite a cop-out. Robert Greenwald with us from Brave New Films. He produced the film that you can see. It's a short at lifttheban.org. And, Robert, is there timing involved here? Do we have legislation pending, or is this intended to put pressure on candidates for 2008?
Well, it's a long-term effort. It's really not the presidential candidate so much as building support in the House of Representatives, where there are about, I think it's 75 people have signed on to the legislation, and the goal is to get it to 150, at which point it will have stronger momentum and a stronger chance other to be successful. So the good news is there's lots that people can do. They can get the video, they can pass it around, they can sign the petition, they can call their local legislator, find out if he or she is supporting the bill to change Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and they can really personalize this issue and be active. You know, one of the things I find is that I don't want to just get up in the morning and be pissed off about something that's going on. I want to be able to do something about it. And here's a really, really good specific case where you can both use the video as a tool to reach out 20, 30, everyone's got 20, 30, 40 people on their email list, and it builds. And it certainly is time for this nonsense to be changed. And the majority of the country is with us. We just have to get the wheels moving in the right way, and we will.
Mm-hmm. Now, Robert, I was intrigued. Last week, you led a panel discussion at the Take Back America conference and offered a case study of the situation that you alluded to in your first remarks here today. And that was that there was a plan by the state party, the Democrats in Nevada, to partner with the Fox News Channel for a presidential debate, and I put that in quotes because these are group appearances. They don't really get to debate one another. And it was scheduled for August of 2007. And this information surfaced in February or March. And I don't remember her name, but a progressive talk show host from Reno was the first person to sound the alarm, at least the one that you heard. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, actually, I believe that was where I first heard it. You know, with emails, and you get several hundred a day, they kind of merge together.
Yeah.
But what had happened, actually, is I had started working on a video separately about Fox attacks Obama because I was so infuriated with, frankly, the lying and the distortion about his religious background and that he'd been trained by radical Muslims. I mean, it was just obscene. While I was in the middle of working on that, Adam Green from MoveOn and I and a few others all saw what was going on, that the Democrats in Nevada were planning to self-emulate or shoot themselves in the foot, as it were, and we said we have to stop this. So we then used the video that I was already working on, and that became the centerpiece of the campaign, saying to Democrats in Nevada and all over the country, look at what's going on. This is not a news organization, and you cannot give them the credibility to allow them to pretend to be a news organization by participating in the debate. And it grew like wildfire. We've had over 500,000 people look at that video. We've had a couple of 100,000 people sign the petition that was designated and focused specifically on the Democrats in Nevada. And ultimately, John Edwards, to his credit, pulled out, and then the debate was finally canceled. The Democrats realized this was not something they should be doing.
Well, and what you and Adam Green from Move On and Mark Green from Air America pointed out was that you created a kind of a wave that permitted the candidates to get on their surfboards and ride it. And to be fair, even though Edwards was the first to announce that he wouldn't participate, his original statement was he wouldn't be there because of a scheduling conflict 6 months down the road, which, you know, seems a little bit shaky of a response. But you were able to create the kind of a political windbreak, if you will, that permitted the leaders to catch up with the public.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's often our job. You know, I mean, if you even look at it, not to get pontificate here, but historically, think about it. The women's movement, the civil rights movement, the labor movement, the peace movement, none of them were led by elected officials. They were led by people. That's our job. Our job is to focus on the issues, to proceed with what we believe is correct and proper, and then the candidates will ultimately follow. And Edwards, to his credit, by the way, on the second debate that we have helped stop, which was the one with the Congressional Black Institute, when Edwards pulled out, his statement was very strong and very clear, saying that he did not want to participate because of Fox News' fraudulent distortion and the fact that they are not a news organization.
Mm-hmm. So what's your advice as a media person about how the candidates should or shouldn't cooperate with Fox News? Because on the one hand, it is a way to reach an obviously red audience that doesn't probably voluntarily expose itself to messages from progressives or Democrats. And on the other hand, it is such a biased platform that one cannot expect to actually deliver your message cleanly and fairly.
Well, exactly. You put it together really perfectly. What we focused on, again, to be very clear, was don't you do a debate which gives them bragging rights for a year. I mean, Roger Ailes put out the press announcement about this debate. 1 hour of programming in the course of a year, he puts that announcement about, only because he knows it's a wonderful protection device, or he thought it would be, till we beat the hell out of them. It's a protection device against their bias. So that's sort of the starting point. Don't let them pretend to be objective. Whether candidates go on individual shows or not is up to them. I think over time, and we're just beginning with Fox attacks, if people go to BraveNewFilms.org, get on our mailing list. It's completely free. You get all the videos at BraveNewFilms.org, and we're coming out with more Fox attacks, and you will see not just how they attacked Obama, not just how they attacked Black America, but other subjects, other groups, other issues, and other politicians. And I think over the next 6 months, people and candidates and their advisors will realize more and more, I don't think I really want to go on and be subjected to the abuse that happens before I go on and after I go on, even if they give me 5 minutes of decent airtime.
Well, and of course, unfortunately, the downside is that Sean Hannity will just pick a clip out of context and play it and pummel the person in absentia.
Exactly. Yeah. And look, again, that's the, you know, the debate would have been an hour and they'd say, look, we were fair, or some one person will go on and they'll say we gave him a shot. But we're monitoring them 24/7. And let me tell you, it is outrageous. It goes on and on and on.
And just people should watch the film Outfoxed and get the details. Robert Greenwald, thanks for joining us. BraveNewFilms.org, LiftTheBan.org.
Hi, I'm J.R. Medina, owner of PG Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue in Pacific Grove. My family and I are proud to serve the finest selection of beer, wine, liquor, and non-alcoholic beverages in the Monterey area. Our store is evolving beyond adult and soft drinks. We serve freshly brewed Acme coffee, the finest breakfast burritos, and now Nathan's hot dogs. We're open daily. Come by and check out the big, big selection and low, low prices at PG Liquors. That's PG Liquors at 229 Grand in Pacific Grove.
I have always said that I will listen to the requests of our commanders on the ground.
Mr. President, you did not listen. You continue to pursue a failed strategy that is breaking our great Army and Marine Corps. I left the Army in protest in order to speak out. Mr. President, you have placed our nation in peril. Our only hope is that Congress will act now to protect our fighting men and women.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. A surprise visit to the troops in Iraq today. The president addressing the idea of troop pullback.
When we begin to draw down troops from Iraq, it will be from a position of strength and success, not from a position of fear and failure.
CBS's Katie Couric in Iraq with an exclusive interview with President Bush asking him directly about troop surge.
Do you believe there really is tangible evidence worthy of 30,000 additional American troops?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, there's security. You cannot move forward politically without security.
The two of them getting into it a bit over the goals of the Iraqi people.
They share the goal of having a country that governs and defends and sustains itself.
They just don't they're share committed the goal to of who's going to govern it.
Well, that's not true. Actually, I think they're all very comfortable with the current government structure. What they're having problems getting to is passing laws.
Right now, Air Force One is bound for Sydney, Australia. By the time the president gets there, it'll be tomorrow in Washington. CBS's Bob Schieffer.
Congress comes back to Washington tomorrow. They'll be demanding that he start withdrawing our troops from this very unpopular war. But he will be in Australia, so he wanted to get ahead of Congress, and he did it today by taking advantage of what Teddy Roosevelt called the bully pulpit.
Felix, one bad hurricane.
Most likely it's going to go in as a very strong hurricane, probably a Category 4.
Hurricane expert Dan Mundell, National Hurricane Center. Those 145-plus mile-an-hour winds expected to pound Honduras, Nicaragua, Belize. CBS News meteorologist Brian Norcross.
We don't think it's going to be a Hurricane Mitch that killed over 10,000 people in 1998. It's a much smaller storm, and it's moving much more quickly. But hurricanes in that mountainous territory can cause mudslides, and we expect significant damage in some of those mountain areas in Honduras and Nicaragua.
ADHD and the differences between boys and girls.
A study in the archives of pediatrics and adolescent medicine has determined that 2.4 million American kids have attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Lead author Dr. Tanya Freilich says more than half are not diagnosed or treated.
The problem of undertreatment was most prominent in the poorest children.
And also a problem among girls. Could be they're not noticed as much as boys are.
Girls may be more distracted, boys may be more distracting.
Barry Bagnato, CBS News.